Tonight on The Download, comedian and actor David Koechner. From the punk band X, John Doe. And WGN's very own Dean Richards. Now, here's your host, a man whose nickname is Sweetened Beverage, Justin Kaufman.
You can't tax me. I give rebates. You can't tax. I'm a healthy alternative. That's who I am. Yeah. A lot going on with Sweetened Beverages in Chicago tonight. If I were President Tony Preckwinkle, I'd double the tax right now. I'd double down. She says she's going to double down. Double the tax. You know, go all in. Why not? We'll talk with Commissioner Richard Boykin tonight. Hey, it's a download on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got a great show. Wow. These come along once in a while. I feel like we're humming right now. Last night was I had to use my brain. A lot of brain twisters on the show last night. Tonight, we talk a little bit more entertainment. Not to say it's not a brain twister, it is. But some amazing people, creative people who not only are creating art and comedy, but also reviewing art and comedy. Dean Richards, the Dean. I gotta say, I've been working this for a long time. Every time I see Dean, I'm like, I'd love for you to come on the show. Right, it'd be great to have you. I'd love to sit down and talk because I have so many questions about how do you cover Hollywood? How do you cover the coasts from Chicago? You know, and you see, I'm a huge fan of WGN TV Morning News, and you'll see him on talking to celebrities who want to, you know, who are sponsoring contacts. You can get two pairs of contacts for one, and you can tell they don't want to be there, and they got the poster behind them, and they're on a satellite. And Dean is just the greatest. He's so good at asking them a question. If they don't get to the second or third question with any sort of passion, he turns it on them. And I just fascinated how that whole system works.
I think he's the hardest working man in show business because
absolutely.
Every morning I wake up, I hear him on Cochrane around at 8 in the morning. You know, he's obviously doing the GN morning news, you know, all the time. And then I hear him on a Friday saying, oh, I'm going out to L.A. to interview a bunch of people tomorrow right. On a Saturday. And then he's here on a Sunday doing the
Toronto
talk show.
International Film Festival just happened. And that's where all the movies line up to be our Oscar buzz and faves. And Dean was there. So we'll talk with him about that festival and, of course, Oscar buzz. But we'll also talk about covering the industry. Dean Richards, my guest tonight live, The Big Table. It's coming up at 8 o'clock. Like I said, at 7:30, Mike Fouché will be here for his regular check-in. And calling in will be Commissioner Richard Boykin. Richard Boykin, of course, he's been a guest a couple times. We've had him three or four times on the show talking about different plans for addressing violence. And just recently, he's raised his profile as being the spokesperson, if you will, for the repeal of the sweetened beverage tax in Cook County. This tax, of course, as Rob was talking about, everyone is lining up to throw money at it, whether it be advertising, what have you. There's public comments in a Cook County board meeting today. And it was, according to Mike, off the chain. So we'll talk with that. We'll talk with Mike Fouché and get Commissioner Boykin on the line to talk to him about his efforts to repeal and whether or not he's satisfied with the movement of that repeal. It got pushed back to committee today. So that'll be coming up after the 7:30 news. Coming up later in the show, 9 o'clock, David Koechner is going to join us. David Koechner, one-time Chicago improviser, comedian, was at the Annoyance Theater in I.O. Of course, now David famed from his role in Anchorman 2. He's on television. He had a recurring role on The Office. Also has a role on Superior Donuts, Twin Peaks. Talk with him about coming back to do stand-up here in Chicago. And I love talking. We had him on before. He's a great, great conversationalist to talk about the art, the craft, stand-up versus improv, and just making your way in Hollywood. David Koechner joins us tonight. Also tonight, so excited about this, John Doe. John Doe is the famed, I guess, singer-songwriter, bass player, guitar player, frontman. They don't really talk like that in punk music, but the band X. Band X, LA punk band from 1977. They started in 1977. This is their 40th year performing together. And they're going to be at Riot Fest on Friday. How great is that?
If you don't know about them, just Google them. It's easy. X. Put it in. Google X and see if it comes,
when
see
I was,
comes up.
When I was putting stuff on Twitter to be like, oh, at, coming up, we're going to talk with at X. I'm like, this is not working. I'm sure it's like the band X or something. But I'm like, X. It's not, Twitter's not helping. It's not autofilling for me on this one. John Doe going to join us. And, of course, it's Wednesday. So Greg Flamm joins us at DuPage Picker for the swap meet coming up at 10 o'clock. So we got a huge show. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. Here are today's top stories. President Trump is inviting Democratic leadership to the White House for dinner, and he's excluding Republicans. Yep. Chuck and Nancy are coming over for a couple taco salads. Trump said that he'll work with anyone, and bipartisan is the way to go. This is really causing turmoil in Washington for those who love one party and hate the other. I mean, President Trump is coming off as an independent right now. What's next? Is Trump going to put a hemp bumper sticker on his Subaru? Start wearing sport coats with patches on the elbow? If you're true independent, grow that hair out. Ponytailed, right? ESPN commentator Jemil Hill called President Trump a white supremacist on Twitter. The White House today said that that should be a fireable offense. The media was quick to point out that Trump called President Obama a racist and a terrorist sympathizer back in the day. See, that's why the White House just needs to hire one person to scroll through Trump's past tweets, right? And avoid it, call it the assistant hypocrisy manager. How about that? That could be an intern's job. I don't care. But it should be a job, right? Listen, I think what Hill said was wrong, but the White House shouldn't be telling ESPN what to do with their employees when their employee has done the same thing in the past, right? Are we cool? We're cool, right? Everyone's cool. Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin says he wants to repeal the sweetened beverage tax. But not this month. No, it was thrown back to committee to be considered next month. Boykin says we need to be doing more to take on gun violence. Stop punishing county residents for drinking pop. I'm not sure how they go hand in hand, but you know what? Commissioner Boykin's coming up after the 7:30 news. He can explain it to us. But the public showed up for the meeting to argue for their right for a six-pack of Sprite or Sierra Mist. I don't know your brand preference. Like I said, if President Preckwinkle really wants to double down, double the tax. Go for the deep ball. The safeties are playing up. They're expecting you to run, Tony. Go deep. Double it. I dare you. Equifax is promising protections to help you monitor your credit after they were hacked and exposed millions of people's Social Security numbers. So that's nice until that gets hacked. I'm hiding my credit report under my mattress. What do you guys think? That's where I put my credit report and my Social Security number. Martin Shkreli had his bond revoked after telling Facebook followers to put Hillary Clinton to, I'm sorry, to pull Hillary Clinton's hair. Seriously. Pass. This dude gets way too much press for a guy who's about to go to jail for 20 years for what? Insider trading. But if we learned anything from the recent Blago exclusives, we'll continue to try and get an interview with this dude for the rest of his life. Ratings count, hits, clicks, as they say in the business, clicks. New research says that a low carbohydrate diet could increase your lifespan. It's very controversial, mostly because nobody wants a diet with low carbohydrates, right? I mean, it's ridiculous. Also, this was an experiment on mice. So let me guess, the mice didn't like lasagna? For once, I'd like these studies to say, just eat everything you can and you'll live longer. It's called the hang around the office kitchen diet. I want to read a cookbook about that, right? In weather, the effects of Hurricane Irma today? Is that what that drizzle was at the beginning of the morning? Speaking of hurricane, or at least the aftermath, man, Floridians will be without power until next week. And it's worse in the Caribbean, as some countries are running out of food and water. How can that happen in this day and age, right? You see those stories about running out of food. Can't we just get primitive and just do airdrops? We don't have helicopters that can roll down that way. It just seems like this running out of food and water is a very 18th century kind of thing after a hurricane. I feel like we should be all over that. In sports, the Sox start us off with a win this afternoon against the Royals. Took 2 of 3 from KC. Continue to be the hot team at a weird time. right? Maybe the Cleveland Indians are rubbing off a bit. The Sox are playing themselves right out of a number one pick next year. So even if they win, they lose. But hey, Lucas Giolito on the mound today with another quality start. I'm telling you, Sox fans, quietly, that's the story of Chicago right now. These young arms, they're winning. Something to look forward to. Okay, let's move on to a team that's winning right now, well, at least in general. They're losing right now, 1-0. Last night they won. The Cubs get back to their winning ways against the Mets. They're trying again tonight. Matt Harvey on the mound for the Mets. Gross. Dude, and Kutcher's already out there being like, that's not what the sign we called, Matt. The Cubs still hold a 2-game lead. They got a huge series with the Cardinals coming up on Friday. That'll go a long way to seeing how close this race will be for the rest of the month. Wilson Contreras, of course, are back for the Cubs. The Cubs still have 2 4-game sets against the Cardinals and Brewers, both on the road, which is kind of garbage if you think about it. I mean, aren't we the reigning champs? So when the schedule makers came out, why would you have 2 4-game sets against rivals on the road at the end of the year? I smell conspiracy. Conspiracy! Play those games in protest. It should be all last-place teams for the last 3 weeks of the year. That's what you get for winning the World Series the year before. How about the Indians won their 21st game in a row, tying the second all-time streak held by the 1935 Cubs. Great squad. The Indians will play the Royals tomorrow in hopes of continuing the streak, but they won't win because I have starter Josh Tomlin on my fantasy team, and he's pitching, so they'll lose just because. That's called Murphy's Law. But hey, you know what? I've rolled myself right into the semis. Every time I get closer and closer to winning at fantasy baseball, I get depressed that I'm better at that than anything else in my life. Yes, I'm so good at that. Oh, bummer. Bears got back at practice this week. No Kevin White, no Jarrell Freeman, and Jordan Howard was limited with an apparent shoulder injury. I always say that more than half of the recipe for success in football is just staying healthy. If you have the least amount of injuries, you probably win 7 games. Doesn't matter who you are. So not a great start for the Bears. 3 starters on IR already. Hey, you know what's coming up? NFL Hall of Fame time. Well, jockeying to see who might be picked for the 2018 class. And the Bear great Brian Urlacher is eligible. How about that? Maybe that's why he's doing all this hair restoration stuff. So he's got a more handsome bust when he gets to Canton. It'll be a nice part. I wonder if he does, if he gets a say on that. He's like, nope, we're not using what I look like as a football player. How about now? It's high and tight. But seriously, Urlacher should be first ballot, right? After that, who's next? Devin Hester? Possibly? Charles Tillman? I think Charles Tillman with the peanut punch out. Julius Peppers, maybe? Al Alfalava? The only safety for the Bears? Nobody? In basketball, ESPN's riling up everybody with the top 100 players ranking. Well, basketball players are mad that they're not all number one. But the list of the top 100 doesn't even include Dwayne Wade. Nikola Mirotic made the list, but D-Wade does not. What does that mean? We pay this guy 20-plus mil a year, and he's ranked below Threekola? Come on, man. I can't even. Come on. And finally tonight, Frank Vincent died. That sucks. The Hollywood go-to for mob hitmen was amazing in movies like Goodfellas and TV shows like The Sopranos. He'd show up at a lot in Chicago. We'll talk to Dean Richards about it, talking about his work. Frank Vincent, I hope you're telling someone to go get to your shine box in heaven right now. Big loss. Hey, that's the carryout for September 13, 2017. We got a surplus on moist towelettes. So the rest of the week, we got a special on ribs. Just so we can get rid of these little guys. You're welcome. All right, coming up, Mike Fouché will be here, and we'll talk with Commissioner Richard Boykin about his efforts to repeal the sweetened beverage tax. That's coming up right after the 7:30 news here on The Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, Rob Martier, how are you?
I'm doing well, my friend.
All right, here, I got a great text. 224 says, you got to fight for your right to Sprite. That's good, right?
Not bad.
It's strong.
It's not bad.
It's got parody song written all over it.
It's bringing it, you know. Cook County Sweet and Beverage Tax.
Here you go, Pop Tax.
Pop Tax.
Pop Tax.
Penny per ounce.
Hello, hello.
What? Is this like
you
the
love
80s?
It. You love
this
it.
This is like Survivor is going to start
it,
singing?
It was what for you. We put it on the, we put it on for you, Mike.
I know, because well, I
because we need to get 80s. up and sort of
they're going to have another episode
energetic.
Of I Love the 80s, and it's going to be about me.
That's right. Mike Boucher from the Daily Line in studio tonight, as he is every Wednesday night, to break down politics, both at the city level, the state, and, of course, the county.
Another good 80s saying, break it down.
Break it down.
Yeah.
The county board meeting, the Cook County board meeting today was eventful.
It was eventful and not. I mean, you know, there was this whole expectation that there was going to be Commissioner Richard Boykin was bringing up an attempt to repeal the soda tax or the pop tax.
Thank you.
As you might call it here.
That's right.
The sugar, sweet, and beverage tax. But it was Preckwinkle, Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, requested that it be referred to committee, which you could look at it as one way it's a delaying action. Another way of looking at it, what she says, is that while she wanted the commissioners to debate it in order to come up with a way to come up with alternative revenues rather than just repealing it and leaving a big giant
budget
hole.
We've seen this become a fight, a proxy fight now, where both the industry for sweetened beverages and the industry for anti-sweetened beverages, Michael Bloomberg, have started throwing commercials on all the airwaves, including here. I mean, this has become in the last 2 weeks – almost like a political campaign.
Well, let's be clear here. I mean, you know, essentially the people that are against the tax are the American Beverage Association, which are your pop guys.
Right.
And then the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, which is ma and pa smaller stores.
And according to polls that continue to be taken, many of Cook County residents are against it.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I mean, these two groups are leading it. The Retail Merchants Association, you know, they have got a real serious, you know, issue with this, because you know, you look at a lot of their businesses. When cigarettes started being taxed, they really took it in the neck. You know, as people have bought fewer and fewer cigarettes, that has been a major, major bite for all those small stores. And so you think about it, you stop, you know, if you're not going to go buy a pop, a lot of these places, you know, they're going to lose business.
Well, let's bring in Commissioner Richard Boykin from the West Side, a frequent contributor here to The Download. And he, of course, was on center stage today with the repeal attempt of the sweetened beverage tax. Commissioner Boykin, thanks for joining us. Good to talk to you.
Justin, thank you so much for having me. Honored to be on again.
All right, so let's talk about this. Were you surprised? I mean, you are a seasoned Cook County politician, so you probably knew that introducing a repeal today was not going to get to a vote. Were you surprised today at the way that it went down at the Cook County Board meeting?
Not at all. I, quite frankly, had always said that maybe it was a 50-50 shot. Look, the reality of it is that Chairman Daley and President Preckwinkle worked overtime to try to send this to committee, to make sure it went to committee. They chose procedure over people. Now, you know, I think we needed one vote. Actually, we had 8 votes to actually suspend the rules. But quite frankly, you know, I think that Commissioner Morrison, who was the chief sponsor of it, I was a sponsor too. But I think he decided that, you know, rather than put our colleagues in a position that they really didn't want to be in to take a vote there, that we would just take the vote in October. Now, what I will tell you is this: President Preckwinkle, Chairman Daley, better roll up their sleeves and they better come up with some revenue alternatives. Now, I've proposed a set of 10, a 10-point plan, a fiscal roadmap yesterday that I believe will save hundreds of millions of dollars for the county. Look, it's high time that we reinvent Cook County government.
Well, let me ask you this.
So wait a minute.
Commissioner,
I mean, if you've got this brilliant, amazing plan, why isn't Tony Preckwinkle jumping on board? What, does she just have it out for you? Does she just dead set on pop? I mean, you know, she anti-pop? I mean, you know, what, why? I mean, if she seems like a person who's looking to try and fill a budget hole. It's not so much that she has a thing about pop. So why aren't your things Why aren't your proposals being adopted?
Why? Well, let me say this. You have to ask Tony Preckwinkle that. But the other thing is that I will say that they figured out ways to co-opt some of these ideas, and they figured out ways to make them their own ideas. But the reality of it is that they have not been transparent. They have not been honest with the public. If you heard President Preckwinkle's press conference yesterday at the hospital, this is all about health care. This is all about obesity and reducing obesity. This is about children getting tooth decay from drinking sweetened beverages. I mean, it's hypocrisy.
But Commissioner Boykin,
it's an outright lie.
You've talked a lot. Let me ask you this, because you've talked about on this program about epidemics and like gun violence and other things that are affecting Chicago communities. Are you going on the record saying that sweetened beverages and the rhetoric coming from, if not rhetoric, the campaign coming from the Cook County Board President and Michael Bloomberg and others is disingenuous?
I'm saying it's totally disingenuous, and quite frankly, it's not the way to deal with the issue of obesity. Or the issue of diabetes and that sort of thing. If you want to deal with those issues, you have to deal with those issues by, one, a public health education campaign. You can do it in the schools, but everything begins at home. And so you have to get parents to teach their children to make better choices. The other thing, if government is so concerned about people's health, then why doesn't Tony Preckwinkle and other government officials do something to eliminate food deserts that exist in communities like Austin, where they don't have access to fresh fruits and vegetables, in communities like Lawndale, in communities like Inglewood, in communities like Maywood, where they don't even have a full-service grocery store, and you have 25,000 people who live in the community. So if government's so concerned about that, you got to eliminate food deserts. You got to have a public health education campaign. Look, if you're concerned about sugar consumption, why not tax ice cream? Why not tax Twinkies? Why not tax donuts? Why not tax?
That sounds like a great idea, because I've been eating too many of those.
The other thing, let me say this. The other thing, if you're so concerned about calories and sugar, why tax diet sodas? Diet sodas have absolutely zero grams of sugar.
Okay, now let me get a word in edgewise here. Hold on a second, Commissioner. I mean, this has been ahead. Yeah, thank you. This has been a great, great issue for you. I mean, you have really just grabbed a hold of this thing, and everybody is. I mean, you've really run away with this, and people are talking about it. You're getting a lot of headlines. You had a good press conference yesterday, and so then now Austin Weekly has a story the other day that you're passing petitions not just to run for Cook County Board Commissioner, but also Cook County Board President. So you're thinking about running for Cook County Board President? Is this going to be the soda tax going to be your leapfrog? The pop tax going to be your leapfrog onto running for Cook County Board President?
Absolutely not. But let me tell you why. Look, we have a county with the highest sales tax in the United States of America. And we're that way because President Preckwinkle pushed this most regressive tax on our people and on our businesses. She's made the county less competitive, not more competitive. In fact, more people have left Cook County than any other county in the United States of America. And they've left for a number of reasons, one being the violence that's occurring in the city of Chicago, where she has an abysmal record in terms of actually dealing with the gun violence that exists in too many of our neighborhoods in the city. She has failed to sit down with the mayor and the governor and actually figure out how we can use county resources, city resources, and state resources to help deal with the wave of drugs that's permeated throughout many of these communities. And there are a whole host of other issues,
That sounds like a campaign speech to me.
Commissioner Boykin, before I let you go, are you predicting that come October or even in any sort of month in the near future that we will see a repeal of the sweetened beverage tax?
My prediction is the beverage tax will go away. That's my prediction. My prediction is we'll have the votes to repeal it, and President Preckwinkle will have a decision to make whether or not she vetoes it. and she doubles down, triples down, and all of that. The reality of it is she's been tone deaf. She's failed to listen to the people, to the constituents. And, you know, when you begin to not hear the constituents, you may not be in office much longer.
Commissioner Richard Boykin represents the West Side for the Cook County Board. Commissioner Boykin, thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you all very much.
All right, there you go. All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll interpret what Commissioner said and talk about what else we need.
Yeah.
There you go. Mike Boucher from the Daily Line in studio. Stay with us. It's a download here at 720 WGN. Mike Boucher in studio. We just had Commissioner Richard Boykin on the program. You know, and he does echo and represent a lot of people who are frustrated with this tax, the sweetened beverage tax.
Yeah.
Does he start to lose people when it becomes about President Preckwinkle? And you heard it in the speech, and yeah. I think that someone texts in, like, why, you know, he makes good points. Why the giggling? There was a point where we both kind of... Only because it went from an issue of sweetened beverage tax to almost a political speech.
Oh yeah, it's definitely something that he's using to leverage himself. I mean, this one of the things about Richard Boykin is that he is one of the most prominent members of the Cook County Board, and it's because he has had a very well-oiled publicity machine. You know, he spends a lot of time making sure that his name gets in the papers. He gets to know people.
He also takes on big issue. This is a big issue that people want to talk about. Gun violence, another that he keeps raising. He makes a good point that
certainly
President Preckwinkle hasn't been that strong when it comes to getting out in front of that issue. But the point being, does he lose the Cook County resident, the voter, when they start to sniff out that he's trying to, as you words you use, leapfrog into a bigger
office?
Here's
the thing: is that members of the Cook County Board know that it doesn't make a difference if you have a lot of publicity attached to your name when you're running for Cook County Board. The way you get elected to Cook County Board is just by having a lot of the local party leaders being interested in you and supporting you. And once you're in office and if you're doing an okay job, you just have a momentum that keeps you going. Mm-hmm. And Richard Boykin has always had something else that is in the corner of his eye, and that's been very clear. You know, there's a lot of talk that he's very interested in having Congressman Danny Davis a seat when that day comes, and who knows when that is, when Danny Davis actually retires.
Well, hold
on a minute. Yeah. When Danny Davis retires, there's going to be a scrum for his seat. And the guy with the biggest name ID is going to be the one with the best chance.
Commissioner Boykin aside, let's talk about President Preckwinkle. This week, even yesterday, he talked about the press conference at the hospital. She has doubled down. She says she wants to dig in. This is important to her. She wants to take on what she considers to be a big issue when it comes to health and issues in the county.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, I know the listeners right now, they're texting in bulk that they are anti-tax. They do not want this tax. There's a lot of bashing on the president.
Yeah.
You just heard the Cook County Commission. The public comments at the Cook County board member was a lot of this.
Right.
But I will say it may be unpopular, but I know people get mad at me, but it is refreshing to have a politician that goes with something that she believes in, whether you believe she believes it.
Yeah.
Over poll numbers or what people want. I mean, she is doubling down on this issue, and it almost feels like she's okay with however it plays out.
You know, I've interacted with Toni Preckwinkle a lot over a number of decades. You know, she was the alderman in Hyde Park. My parents lived in Hyde Park. I grew up in Hyde Park. I remember her well in the 80s. And one of the things about her is you got to remember she's a former school teacher, and she is the kind of former school teacher. She was the teacher that if you crossed, she would, you know, really get you, like make you sit in the back of the room and stare at the wall for a while or something like that. And she has a very clear idea in her mind about what is right and what is wrong. It may not be your idea, but she has a very clear idea about right and wrong. And, you know, when she is on path for something, she is not going to be changing.
Yeah, and I mean you cover the county and you know the issues that are at play. I mean, if the county commissioners come through with an alternative plan change the tax or change the way it's done or make some sort of amendment,
she might go for that if there was an alternative solution. You know, I don't know her mind. I don't know that she has decided that she has to have a pop tax in Chicago and Cook County. I know that she believes that this budget hole has to be filled and that the way the county government is structured, there's only so many ways in which you can do it. And I think that she is unwilling to raise property taxes further because there's been a lot of property tax raises in Chicago and Cook County.
And she also said the county commissioners won't go for it.
So. Right. So, you know, this is it.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Line joins us every Wednesday tonight. A very interesting day in Cook County politics. Mike, we'll see you next Wednesday, bud.
Good to be here.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 9 o'clock tonight, David Koechner is going to join us, the longtime great actor, comedian, who's going to be in Chicago. He's going to be at the Metropolis in Arlington Heights coming up this weekend. Symphony of Chaos, that's the name of his show. David Koechner, of course, from Anchorman and all sorts of TV shows, including the new season of Twin Peaks on Showtime. So how great is that? I just feel like I want to spend 15, 20 minutes with him just asking about how David Lynch was. You know? Interesting. And then also coming up, John Doe from the LA punk band X. They're going to be at Riot Fest coming up, an iconic punk band, 40 years, celebrating their 40th anniversary this year. So we'll talk with John Doe coming up as well later tonight. My next guest just got back from the Toronto International Film Festival. Of course, the festival has become the go-to for new films that are going to be vying for the Oscar buzz. So it's a who's who of Hollywood producers, actors, and media. And that's why WGN's very own Dean Richards was in attendance. Dean Richards has made an
occurrence. Oh, thanks, Rob. Yeah. Thanks, Rob. Nice for that. I got to fake the applause here.
He's not even.
He's not even there. He's Rob's like, taking a nap.
He's like, well, Dean's here. We can. And that's
Rob used to do the news on my show. You know,
he did.
One of the many newscasters I've chased off my Sunday
show.
Here.
I'm here.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm right here.
I'm doing new stuff.
Sure, you are.
Well, Dean, I love that I'm one of Dean's biggest fans.
Would that,
fans.
Would that new
Dean.
Stuff be turkey, ham, or?
Actually, it's pizza tonight.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I should have stopped up there.
Dean has made a career out of covering Hollywood and the coasts for the Midwest, whether it's delivering entertainment reports, interviewing celebrities, giving us his Dean's List reviews on WGN TV, or appearing regularly on Steve Cochran's show, and of course, hosting his own show on Sunday mornings. Dean's a pro's pro. Don't take my word for it. Dean's an Emmy Award-winning journalist who's been inducted into the Silver Circle of the Chicago Television Academy and, of course, the WGN Walk of Fame. Dean Richards, my guest tonight.
That's exciting. And when WGN Radio moves from this location and this becomes a mattress store, it's going to be impressive to have that Walk of Fame. People are going to be coming here to buy a queen-size fitted, double mattress, whatever they're called. And they're going to go, who's this Dean Richards character?
Maybe if they say Dean Richards, you get like 20% off or something like
that. Oh, that would be nice. Best, yeah, a free mattress pad.
Thanks for being here, man. I know it's a late night for you, and I know that you do most of your work in the morning, but I've been chasing you for a while to come in, so I appreciate it.
You have
it.
Been asking for a very long time, and I appreciate that because I'm a fan of the show. I hear your show frequently because a lot of times I'm just getting out of movies when this show is on. So I'm driving home and I'm catching, you know, whatever cool thing that you have going on the show. So all the compliments right back at you. A fan. I love the variety. I think you're one of
Thanks,
the best interviewers on the station.
Thank you, buddy. That means a lot coming from you. Yeah. Toronto International Film Festival. You just got back. TIFF,
because if you're too busy to actually say the four words.
It's amazing to me because we know we've been conditioned that Sundance is to go to other film festivals. Right. Toronto, though, in the last decade or so, it's just exploded to be, as I said, the go-to for Oscar buzz.
Sure. It's the biggest film festival in North America, for number one. But it's now attained, I think, the same kind of status as Cannes, as some of the world's biggest film festivals. And I would argue... I've always kind of felt that Toronto is sort of the consumer's best film festival. Cannes is great, Sundance is great, all those films are great. If you're concerned about movies that are going to be coming out in 3 to 5 years, those are marketing festivals.
Right.
The Toronto International Film Festival are movies that are going to, one of the films that was at the film festival is opening tomorrow. It's the Darren Aronofsky film,
right.
Mother, which I have not seen yet. I was doing some interviews at the time that they were screening it, so I wasn't able to see it.
A surprise kind Toronto. Of movie. A movie that I read a story about that they're not following the script when it comes to marketing, and they kind of right. revealed it at the last minute.
I'm told by a friend of mine who's a critic in another city who was able to go see this movie. He said that he liked the movie, but it's going to be one of those movies that you're ashamed to recommend. That when you recommend this movie, people are going to go, "What is wrong with you?" That you think so. It's supposed to be pretty twisted. I'm going to see it tomorrow, so I'll have my review on that in the next couple of days. But that's my point being that these are films that are coming out in the next couple of weeks. I saw the Idris Elba, Kate Winslet film, The Mountain Between Us, which is a story about two people who hire a private plane. They need to get to where they're going quickly. The weather's not allowing it, so they decide to hire this private plane, and they find some crazy pilot who will take them up in this weather. And it not a good idea when the plane rips apart. And it crashes, and they are left to survive on their own. The pilot is killed. They're left to survive on their own in a very treacherous, snow-packed, icy conditions between two mountains. They've got to figure out how to get out of there. They start off as strangers. Their relationship in this bizarre environment that they're in, these bizarre circumstances, changes their relationship, and it's quite a story. Is all I'll say right now. I'll review it more.
Is this the kickoff? I mean, does Toronto become the kickoff for Oscar season? I mean, I know it's a little early.
Yeah,
but is this usually where you're going to get the movies that we're going to be talking about?
Yeah. Oscar award season officially began about 10 days ago when the Toronto International Film Festival began. It starts at the Venice Film Festival, which is the week prior to Toronto. But since that's not in America, and we're all about America, I guess Toronto's not in America either. No,
it's in North America.
North America.
Right.
Venice and Toronto is where the Oscar battle begins.
Are you at a point, Dean, where as a guy who's been doing this for so many years, and you're able to walk into a movie, you can sense right away if this is a movie that A is good or B is on its way to Oscar? I mean, can you do that just with your eyes and everything? Because I'm terrible at it. Every time I'm in a screener, and sometimes you're in there, I'm like, I don't know if this is good. I can't tell.
Yeah. I used to feel that way. I mean, when I started reviewing films, you know, I had Roger Ebert sitting on one side of me and Gene Siskel on the other, and Roy Leonard is, sitting right over there. And I'm sitting in that little screening room that's right down the street going, somebody's made a terrible mistake. I should not be in this room with these people. You do question yourself, but I think as you do it longer, you get more confidence in your own. You get more confidence in that there is no right or wrong review. It's just your opinion. So right. How can you be wrong? However you feel about a movie, there is no right or wrong with it. I say this all the time when people. I guarantee that after I do my reviews on Friday, and every critic, I'm sure, has the same thing. And especially now in this world of social media where everybody has way too much access, we are bombarded with about half of the emails, texts, social media messages, etc.
Disagree with you?
You are the most You are the most intelligent. I couldn't agree with you more. You're the greatest. And the other half are you are the biggest idiot. I can't agree with you more. It's part of this divisive world in which we live now where either you're right
Right.
or wrong, when really with this, it's just your opinion. Some people like steak and some people don't like steak.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
It's such an and let's take a break so we can stay on time. But we'll pick this conversation up with it's such an interesting career because you are someone who leads with your opinion. You lead with a review or what you think of a movie, and that has been an age-old there's also an age-old industry in disagreeing with that. I mean think right. of music critics and I mean there's something about that I want to kind of
you should and it's healthy. And to answer your original question on this very quickly so you can go to your break, No, I don't know when I can't tell right away if something's going to be an Oscar movie. we can explain more after
all
the break.
All right, good. Dean Richards in studio with me, of course, the WGN Walk of Fame inductee, and a guy you can see pretty much all over WGN TV and radio, including Sundays here on WGN 720. All right, we'll take a quick break. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman in studio with me.
That's Dean. WGN Morning News you were just talking about. That is, sometimes it's just unwatchable.
Dean Richards in studio
when
with
I'm,
us?
When I'm on it.
When you're on it. It's I love, I got to say, the it is one of you guys, what you guys do in the morning,
silly.
All of you guys together.
Completely
it's
silly.
It's silly, but it's also genuine. It's genuine and it's authentic silly. Everything that you do, it's uniquely Chicago, and it's not trying too hard. I love it. It's a different conversation.
This past couple of weeks, really, I think, is like what the WGN TV morning news is. We've had some pretty horrific stories with the hurricanes,
right.
With all the political stuff going on, with everything that's going on. We're serious when we need to be serious, and believe it or not, responsible when we need to be. I know people find that hard to believe. Yesterday I was pumping gas for people at a gas station in Northlake. Who knows what Pat Tomasulo's got lined up for you next.
But isn't that, I mean, that's what we want out of our media. It reflects who we are and mirrors who we are. We're not always serious. We're not always funny. We're not always silly. There's ways to do it. So that's what I love about the program and what you guys capture there. But on to before the break, we're talking about this idea of...
Justin's not letting me talk during the breaks, by the way.
We started to continue the conversation. I said, hold it. We'll save it for the
later. Right. I do what I don't want my guests to do, waste it off the air.
It's hard not to do it, and you just want to keep talking.
So if you're
to them.
A lip reader and you're watching on WGNradio.com, you'll be able to see the much more interesting conversation that we're having off the air.
Talking about the idea of Siskel and Ebert, a great combination of film reviewers where they created a way to have dialogue with each other that was a thumbs up, thumbs down, where they were kind of playing at the idea we just talked about, that a reviewer is one opinion, and part of the fun is it that you can disagree with that. Over time, and I don't know if it's the advent of social media and Twitter and other places, it seems like that's got hypercharged in a way that it's not enough to just disagree with somebody, but you have to go further, that you have to discredit, you have to keep, and we see this in politics.
I was going to say, isn't that the case with most every kind of discourse that there is now, not just with the average person, but go up the chain all the way to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, where it's not enough to politely disagree with somebody, that you have to insult them and degrade them in some ways. Somehow we got away from that. Don't want to get off into a political side, but I mean, it's going on everywhere. And maybe, not our kind of talk radio here on WGN. I don't think we've really ever done that kind of talk radio here on WGN. But if you go around the country, it's not hard to find talk show hosts who are they're not just provocative and controversial. They intentionally try to provoke people because they think it's a more interesting radio show to listen to, which I would disagree with. But to your point about the movie review, somehow we went from Roger and Gene sitting across the aisle from each other on television, disagreeing with each other. And we went from the legendary great Roy Leonard, who, by the way, died 3 years ago this week. I remembered him on Facebook,
legend,
and I think about Roy all the time, and especially with something like this, because there was nobody who was more even tempered and fair, even if he disagreed with you, than Roy Leonard. We would often go see the same movies and often come away with completely different opinions on the movies, and Roy would politely listen to you, and he would tell you what he thought. He said, "Hey, man, I really enjoyed the conversation. Yeah, really, I didn't think of that." He wouldn't change his opinion.
Right.
But he was a master of sharing two different opinions and somehow being able to do it courteously and politely. And somehow we have gotten away from that right now.
Why do you think it is? I mean, because it is interesting to me, because I would think you're at the front lines of that. By being in a situation where you have to give reviews for television or for print or for the radio show, you're constantly saying, this is what I think of this. 3 stars, 2 stars, Dean's List, whatever it is. But it's set up for you to ask for feedback.
Yeah, you're sort of begging for.
Yeah, but that's the idea of it, right? Yeah,
well, I hope And, you know, I bring this up all the time, that I would hope that it does nothing more than simply provoke other opinions. I love hearing other opinions. I love hearing, you know, people telling me that they saw a movie and they saw something different in the movie than I did. I don't take it personally. It's not the end of the world. I'm not writing the Bible. It's a it's a review. You know, I went to see the movie It last week, you know, supposedly the scariest movie that's ever been made. I didn't think it was that scary. I thought that it had moments of great shock and suspense. I thought it was more funny than scary. I thought that the relationship between the kids in the movie really is the strength of that movie. And, you know, other people, it's like, oh, my God, I screamed. I can't believe you didn't find this to be a scare. Well, I'm glad that you took something out of the movie that I didn't. And again, we'll go back to a sentence that Roy Leonard told me, Dean, there's a reason that Baskin-Robbins makes 31 flavors. We all don't have to like the same thing. Thank you, Roy Leonard.
I mean, there's truth in that. I mean, as we talk about the discourse in this country going from whether it's arts and entertainment or whether it's politics, that, yeah, we don't all have to like the same thing.
It's the new way of disagreeing with people, that you have to beat them down some way. What's so wrong with just listening to somebody's opinion and having a different opinion, whether it's about politics or whether it's there was a huge argument today that I accidentally walked into in a hallway at the TV station. Hillary Clinton had just been on The View, I think, today. And, you know, imagine that, a heated conversation about Hillary Clinton popping up someplace. But people were in the hallway debating it. It's like, why can't you? Wait, it's okay. You like Hillary Clinton and you don't like Hillary Clinton. Okay. So what?
That should be the name of, if you ever get another vehicle for WGN, it should be a so?
Yeah.
With Dean Richards. My new segment. So?
So? And you got to raise your voice at the end like that.
Dean Richards, my guest at the big table tonight. We're talking about film reviewing and arts and entertainment. The other part of what you do, which is tremendous, is, I mean, you cover Hollywood from the Midwest. I think there's so many different artists and filmmakers and TV stars and actors that come through Chicago and will be on the show. A lot of times, whether it be your Sunday show or whether it be on WGN TV, and you're able to get them here and they come through. And then there's also, I think, what becomes the more iconic stuff is the stuff when you do the satellite stuff with somebody who's selling something.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
And you
Mel
watch,
Gibson.
Yeah, right. Classic Mel Gibson, perfect. But this idea that you can tell that the person who's on the line, who's on the satellite, doesn't really want to be there. They're done with it before it even started. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with someone who has made it pretty much public that they don't like the fact that they have to talk to you?
Or anybody.
I don't mean you personally, but yeah.
Or anybody. They just don't like to be interviewed, but they're being forced to, or they're contractually obliged to as part of their deal to promote their movie, album, whatever it is. You've had this happen. Anyone who does interviewing for a living, you have people who show up who are, maybe they're nervous about being on the radio or TV. Maybe they're drunk. Maybe they are just in a bad mood. I mean, a lot of people, I find this with actors, there's a reason why they like portraying somebody else. They're not comfortable in their own shoes. Mm. They would rather have a script to tell them what to say and how to act because they are simply not comfortable in their own shoes. Robin Williams was the best example of that, where off camera he was a little bit shy. He was quite a bit shy. He was very awkward. The little small talk that you have to have while they're setting up the lights, mm-hmm. and, you know, getting all that extremely uncomfortable. The second that the cameras are rolling, he's on, and he's the Robin Williams that you know. He was just more comfortable in that persona. It's nothing bad. It's just that's how he is. So as an interviewer, I think we all learn how to warm up the guests
right.
a little bit.
I was going to say, I mean, in those situations where you're dealing with the top-level talent, I mean, I have people come through, but most of the time they're passionate about wanting to tell their story because they're not contractually obliged to be here.
But people like that who want to tell their story don't do it all the time, and they come in and they're really nervous. And we have to find ways to get them.
So how do you do it? I mean, when the lights are
comfortable.
Larry Potash is doing his thing, and you're getting set up on the side. Like, I often
talk to them before they go on the air. I'll go into. We have a little green room where there's coffee and snacks that have been there for several months. You think I'm kidding? I'll just go and hang out with them for a little while. I can see what they want to talk about. I can see that they feel comfortable that right. The first time that they're seeing me and talking to me is not with six cameras facing right. them and lights. And, Larry Potash is nothing but hands when you get on that set. It can be a little awkward sometimes. So
Dean Richards, my guest, of course, WGN Television, but also WGN Radio here, inductee of the Chicago, the Walk of Fame right outside the Tribune Tower. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update with Rob in the news.
Do we get to hear Rob Martyr again?
We do, of course. We will get an update on the news with Rob, and we'll continue our conversation.
Do we have to hear Rob again is what I meant.
Hey, man, I get paid either way.
Thanks, Rob.
That may have been the best newscast I've ever heard in my life.
That was it. That's the one. That's the you could tell your buddies over at the Silver Circle.
How quick does Rob Martyr leave his position?
He's got dinner in the microwave, man.
He's like, I'm Rob Martyr, WGN News. And then you played five seconds of music. Yeah, hi, it's Justin Kaufman. I turn around because we're not in the same room. We were connected by TV monitors. I turn around and Rob's gone. You can't even get out of the chair that fast.
I'm a major market news
anchor.
Did
you vaporize in that chair? There's no possible way a human could get out of the chair as quickly as you did.
Half the time, Rob rolls the city council. He goes to City Hall, gets a press conference, gets a soundbite in the middle of news.
Wow.
Breaks. Yeah, he's a multitasker.
He has resources.
Got a car right out front ready to roll.
That's right.
What do you think about that, Mr. Mayor?
I miss Rob.
I miss you too.
Rob was one of the many newscasters that I drove off of my Sunday show.
It really had.
There's a long line of newscasters. They come there for a little while. They want to be on the Sunday show. Great. Until they actually meet me. And then
downhill
things go sour.
There.
Yeah.
It's not true.
It's kind of true.
Dean, picking up on the conversation we were having before the news, what I like about you, especially in a position where you need to cover Hollywood from the Midwest, is that you don't suffer fools. And what I mean by that is that there will be people, and we've mentioned Mel Gibson and others, who will come on who don't want to do it. They don't want to be there. And they don't give you any sort of – they don't play the game. At what point do you, as an entertainment reporter or interviewer, do you say enough of this?
It depends on if it's live or if it's a recorded interview. If it's a recorded interview, I'll end it when I sense that they don't want to be there. They're not even trying to, provide any interesting content in any way. Then there's no point in wasting their time. There's no point in wasting my time. It's not something that if it's recorded, it's probably not something that's going to be on the air in the first place.
Anyway, right.
If it's live, sometimes really honestly, what I'm hoping is that it's so disastrous and so bad that it's kind of entertaining. I don't mean like Mel Gibson where he curses me out on right. the air. That's a whole another thing, and I think that there were far greater issues going on with Mel Gibson, just my opinion, I don't know if it's true or not, than he did not like that I asked him legitimate questions about his past, something that they knew that I was going to do. His PR people approached me three different times. I turned down the interview three different times. Because they said they didn't want to talk about anti-Semitism and domestic violence and all of the things that
he was in the news for.
He was in the news for. And, at the end of the day, we goof around, we have fun on the TV morning news. But at the end of the day, it's a news show. And when you have a guest like Mel Gibson, I think you're obligated to politely ask questions that people might be wondering about.
Especially, because it might be different if you're interviewing Mel Gibson today, meaning that he's at Daddy's Home 3 or whatever it is that's out. But this was, you're within the...
This was his first...
This is his rebound tour.
This was the first interview, the first set of interviews after an 8-year absence, 8 years of all of the bad things that had happened to him. I don't want to rehash the whole thing. It's not worth it. But that whole thing, I mean, you know, people say, oh, you know, I shouldn't have asked about his personal life. Well, you know, when you're in the public life, you sort of, people are going to ask you about that, especially when you clearly inform his handlers that you're going to, that you have an obligation to bring it up. And I said, if that's a problem for you, I'll pass on the interview. I have no problem not doing the interview, but I got to let you know that I have to politely bring this up.
Let me ask you. I mean, I think this is, I'm curious. I'm sure a lot of people at home are curious about how is it dealing with Hollywood handlers in the way that I don't mean, you know, like, you know, tell me all your horror stories, but the concept that is Hollywood, especially when they want, they're in a promotional, they're looking for promotional opportunities to sell their movie, their, sure, their client, whatever. Are they easy to, I mean, when you deal with being from Chicago, Is it simple? Is it smooth? Do they respect this town? Do they respect?
I think they do. I think they respect Chicago, and they definitely respect WGN. They know the legacy of this radio station. They know the legacy of the TV station. They look at the ratings. You know, they know that our ratings on the TV morning news are through the roof, and you know they want their people to be where the most eyeballs are going to see them. So, they do respect all of that. Some people, it's really no different than any other industry. Some people are really great to deal with. It's like any of you listening right now, it's just like your job. Some people are great to deal with, and some people you want to stick pencils in their eyes. That's how annoying they are.
Is there a limit? Because we see, I keep thinking about it like when you see shows like Entourage or others where they kind of fictionalize pulling back the carpet a little bit and seeing behind the curtain. Is there an effort to control the story? Are they always trying to
put the most positive spin they possibly can on things? If, you know, during the Lindsay Lohan era, when we would talk to Lindsay Lohan and they would say, you know, well, no, she doesn't want to talk about blah, 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 whatever the negative thing was. So then I would have to make a decision if it's something that's pertinent, if it's something that's newsworthy, if it's just, you know, if it's just gossip, if it's something stupid, I don't really care about it that much. But if it's something that's newsworthy, then I have to decide, am I going to pass on this interview or am I going to find nine times out of 10, their PR people understand that we are, at the end of the day, we're journalists. At the end of the day, almost all of us, some people aren't, but all of us are news people, and that we have a responsibility. And that if we're going to ask about something that's controversial, that we simply do it politely and respectfully. They almost always understand that. Some don't want, I've had interviews completely stopped. I've had people step in front of the camera when they felt that I've gone into an area where I shouldn't have.
Really?
That they were not comfortable with me, or if I've pursued a line of questioning when the person was avoiding answering my question, that I pursued it and they would just, you know, stop and end the interview. That's happened. That's that's part of
that's
the,
amazing.
The deal.
I wonder if it gets, and you would be a bird's eye view of this, but you know, also in Hollywood and entertainment, there has become almost, I put a premium on amateur journalism, citizen journalism, people who have blogs and others that are now have a great audience, and they can now go to the film festivals or to Comic Cons and be able to try and curry favor with that audience to try and get the people to talk to them. I mean, how does that change the game that you play?
That is changing, where it used to be, you know, talking to the A-listers, when it used to be, you know, strictly newspaper, the major newspapers, the major TV stations. Now you're seeing, you know, some of the major blogs that are, you know, being included in rotation, you know, and it's always interesting. You know, it's like, you know, the grizzly old newspaper guys, the TV guys that have way too much makeup on, and the guys that look like bike messengers who are the web people. Wait, do you work at Whole Foods or are you a reporter?
Well, it is. I mean, it is something to think about because Hollywood is coming to a point where there's so many different projects now, streaming and otherwise. We see Netflix and the surge, sure, and Hulu and other places where there's a lot of projects out there that need coverage.
Yeah.
And I would assume that the pitch load has gotten bigger for, hey, you should talk to this person on WGN, you should talk to this person, all the people that are coming through.
In some cases, but in some cases for some movies that are targeted specifically to millennials, the crusty old newspapers and the traditional old TV stations are
put on the back
not
burner,
a,
right?
Not a priority anymore. Now they want to talk to the bloggers where, I mean, the world is changing in how people are watching movies, what kind of movies they're watching, on what devices they're watching their movies, and how they choose to access it all.
I think it's interesting.
It's all changing.
Because I saw a reading up on Hollywood's war on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yep.
This concept that they don't like the idea that people can essentially say if they like a movie or not like a movie, and that gets manipulated in ways, and now there's too much power given to that website to rate a movie. I mean, there seems to be this delicate balance between the industry that is reviewing Hollywood and Hollywood, and that's, I guess, what I'm getting at about how you keep that balance to say that, you know, you both need each other. But at the same time, you can't have one having power over the other.
Yeah, I don't think it's power over the other. I think it's a relationship business, and you know, you can go on. It's not so much on Rotten Tomatoes, but there are other sites where people share their opinions, and it's just like the guy next door. No, nothing against the guy next door, but it's just somebody's opinion. So for somebody to write a blog and put their opinion about a movie to have the same weight as A.O. Scott from the New York Times, that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, Scott's view is going to be seen by millions. So I think the studios, care, the studios, the publicity people, the managers, they all look at all that stuff.
Right.
You know, they look and see, you know, who are we inviting to come and interview our stars? Are the major newspaper critics being invited? Do we have, WGN? Do we have, certain major media outlets? Because we want to get our product in front of as many eyeballs as possible.
But I wonder,
are we going to do that with WGN, or are we going to do that with, Jimbo's, major movie reviews that he puts on when he has time?
Well, I think about the music industry, and I always think of a good example here in Chicago, Chance the Rapper. He doesn't need the Tribune. He doesn't need WGN.
No, he didn't need a record company.
He has Twitter. He has SoundCloud. He has other places that he uses that he has a direct audience. And a lot of film blogs probably have the same thing, where they have millions and millions. So at a certain point, to understand the other side, where there has been you and I may not understand it, but this idea that a bridge has been built between, a person who can write his review and a one-to-one to who's going to read it. And I wonder if Hollywood is recognizing that. And you say
so.
They are. It has to change the dynamics.
I think
of the
business. They're definitely responding more to digital media, to social media. Very definite. And they are striving to do what Chance did, by forming and Donald Trump forming a direct connection directly to the public. Let's get rid of the middleman.
Yeah.
Let's get rid of everybody in the middle, and I'll take my product directly to you. I think people still have a critic's opinion is still a value in some way, whether it's because you will agree with what we have to say every week, or I know I have plenty of people who say, well, you like that movie, so I know I'm going to hate it. But they know
right.
that I'm their yardstick.
But you also have a discipline and a track record. And I think that the experience of being able to be the guy that constantly delivers the review and shows nuance and can go in one way or the other. But the point is that you're always doing the job. You're professional.
And I think that's the difference between what I do and what a lot of the bloggers do, is that you have a track record. You have a sort of an on-air voice that people are familiar with. So
right.
they'll know that if Dean likes that, I'm going to like that. If Dean likes it, I'm going to hate it. But one way or the other, with a blogger who you have no idea, it's just, he may as well be a guy talking out on the street to himself. and often is.
There are some good. They get good audience out here right in front of the Michigan Avenue studio.
I would say you do have an interesting mix of people on the street from when I'm usually here.
It's a different crowd. Well, you know, like I mean, we're not going to be able to get to all the things I want to talk to you about. I mean, we haven't even talked about
just
the radio
have to
career,
do it again
part
sometime.
Two, part three, part four. I am interested in though. You know, I see this in sports, and I see it somewhat in food and in restaurant reviews. Where the industry, sports is a good example. The NFL would love to get rid of the middleman. They would love to have it, and you've seen this where they hire journalists to purport for the Bears that are hired by the Bears. You know, or you see in restaurant reviews now they have the ability for the chef to be able to talk right to a person. Do you see a future in which criticism in Hollywood, Hollywood finds a way to get around the critic?
No, I think the public is way too smart to accept anything like that. I think the public, and especially here in Chicago, I mean, we really have our own way of thinking here, and we don't suffer fools here, and we don't like somebody who's on the take, ironically, is the way the city's been run right. for so many years. If people sense that there are people who are reviewing or speaking glowingly of movies are on the payroll, they'll completely ignore whatever that opinion is. You see when the movie commercials or the trailers come up, and there's always two or three names of, you know, greatest movie that's ever been made says blah, 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 the same names. Even those of us who are in the industry have no idea who those people are. You know, we assume that they are people who are on the take.
Plants.
From, maybe I shouldn't even say on the take. They may not be getting paid for their complimentary reviews. But some people do like to see their names in those ads and will say anything to get their names in those ads. There are people like that. 99% of the critics are not like that, but there are a few people, and you will see their names in virtually every ad that comes along.
You mentioned, you know, Chicago, and we'll wrap it right here, but I mean, Siskel and Ebert, Chicago has a tremendous, if not, beyond maybe some of the New York Times, other places, but we have such a tremendous history when it comes to film reviews and critics. Do you feel that? I mean, being sort of one of the primary critics
definitely. I feel it. I feel a sense of responsibility because of it, because of my friendship. I knew Roger way better than I knew Gene. Gene passed away before I really could become friends with him, but I was friends with Roger and honored to be. And I sort of feel like, not that I'm comparing myself in any way, but I feel like he taught all of us how to be movie critics, how to look at things and analyze them with some kind of, you know, critical analysis that's reasoned and fair. And I think that it would be insulting to the memory of my friend to not try to carry on that legacy in some way. And especially, I'm going to bring up the name of Roy Leonard again, who I think set the bar super high for all of us of how to look at movies, how to look at theater. You know, Roy was when Roy was in a room, he was always the hippest guy in the room and knew what music was happening and what was going on at that moment. All of these guys, these are the giants of Chicago film criticism and media criticism. I do feel that, and I hear that when I'm around the country and around the world. People go, "Oh, Chicago, Siskel and Ebert." They bring it up all the time.
Dean Richards, the man who's right here, his star is right in front of the studio here.
You want to know what a man is doing to it right now, by the way. Don't turn around is all I can say.
WGN Radio Walk
Thank
of Fame.
Thank you, sir. And, Thank you for washing, in quotes, washing my star.
Dean can be heard here on the Cochran Show every morning and also on Sundays, of course, with his own show and, of course, WGN TV. All over the place. Dean, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks,
and you got to come back
and
we can talk some
me.
More.
And I would love it.
Thanks, Rob. It is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up a little bit later in the hour, John Doe from the LA punk band X, celebrating their 40th anniversary. The band started in 1977. They're going to be at Riot Fest this weekend, one of the headliners. How great to have the band X in Chicago. John Doe going to join me coming up after the 9:30 news. And tonight, 10 o'clock, Greg Flamm will be in the studio. We'll do Swap Meet. This is where we evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk, in that order. 312-981-7200. Well, coming up this weekend at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center in Arlington Heights is A Symphony of Chaos. That's the name of the show being put on by the great one-time Chicago comedian and actor David Koechner. Koechner cut his teeth in Chicago at places like I.O. and the Annoyance Theater before heading out to New York to be a cast member on Saturday Night Live. He had success in movies like Anchorman and on television, roles like in The Office, Superior Donuts, where he plays Tush. Also, a role in the new season of Twin Peaks on Showtime. David Koechner in Arlington Heights for a show on Saturday night at the Metropolis. And he joins me now on The Download. David Koechner, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Juice, how are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for joining us. We talked probably about a year or two ago when you were coming in through with Beer Shark Mice. In that conversation, I remember this, we talked about the differences between improv and stand-up because you were doing both on the same ticket when you were here for I.O., for shows at I.O. Talk about that. This Symphony of Chaos, talk about this being more of a stand-up show than improv and how you approach it.
Well, you know what you're going to do. You've got your set list. You've got your stories and your jokes and your characters all laid out. So you've got a running order. In improvisation, you don't have a running order. You have a suggestion that starts the show, and that's it, and off you go. And you're creating it with five or six other people. Mm-hmm. And it's all about listening and responding in the moment. It's more of a jazz performance, if you will. So I'd say that's the main difference. Although I will say, in this show, I just found out today that apparently, I don't know, in a week or something, the musical Into the Woods is going to be playing there at the Metropolis. Yep. And so they called today and said, hey, we've already built the set. are you cool with that? And I'm like, are you kidding me? That's what a wonderful opportunity.
Leave it to you to see it as a wonderful opportunity. You could dress like a witch. I forgot the characters.
I have to use it.
Yeah, you have to.
It's there. I will learn snippets of songs from Into the Woods, sprinkle them throughout the show. I will be using the set. I mean, how can you not?
And how can you
it's
not?
Going to be a once in a lifetime opportunity to do it. This show will never be performed again. So it's Symphony of Chaos, Into the Wood.
Into the Wood.
Or should it be Go Get Some Wood?
I like Go Get Some Wood. I think that works out. And who knows? This could be the beginning of a wonderful relationship. You can modify the musical. You can find a whole new show that you bring back to L.A. And in a couple of years, we'll see it on television. How about that?
Yes, I will have to improvise some songs based on the original music and the original musical. I'll have to figure out the story of that play and all that stuff. So because it's there, you can't ignore it. So I'll definitely be playing with it. It just adds another layer of specialness to this show.
Absolutely. David Koechner, I'm interested, asking about the differences between improv and stand-up, but how much do the all the things that you've been taught and that you've studied in the craft of improvisation, how do you use it in a stand-up show? Because I understand the set list and the jokes are already planned, but what are some of the things that you use when performing the show?
Well, I'd say number one, the first thing you use is your ingrained stage muscle, because that's what you get, in my mind, with improvisation. You are up there. You're living in the moment. You just get stronger on stage. You don't get thrown. You can adapt. I guess that would be, in one word, adaptability. So whatever happens that night, because every performance is going to be a little bit different.
Right.
But given the background of improvisation, maybe I would invite it a little bit more. Or there's always something that happens in my show that is improvised, because I do go out into the audience at some point during the show. So that always leaves open the door for some audience interaction and something new that's going to happen. Plus, when you start your show, you like to appreciate the environment. Obviously, this is going to be wildly different this week. But appreciate the environment that you're coming through. So I'm in Arlington Heights at the suburbs of Chicago. You've got Schaumburg out there. So I like to add in a little local flavor, see if there's any, something happening locally on the scene, you know, also whatever the municipality is famous for, you try to add that in there. And then, you know, if you can, you work it through the show a little bit here and there, you weave, you know, you're creating a tapestry.
Right. You know, I love it because you, last time we talked, you talked about doing stand-up and you've been doing it for a couple of years now. In a situation where, let's say that you have some, you're not shooting something and you have the ability to go work on stage in LA or anywhere at this point, do you have a preference? Is there a point where you're like, hey, Dave, we'd love you to come be a part of this improv show we have at IO, or hey, Dave, you know, we've got a slot open at one of the clubs, come do a set, some stand up. Is there a preference at this point as a comedian?
Tonight I'm going to go do three sets at three different clubs for 15 minutes each, because I, you know, you've got to work out a little bit before the big show this weekend. So, I'm doing that. So if I have a show coming up, that's my preference.
Yeah.
To work on the thing that you're going to be presenting. If I've got an opportunity to play with my friends at the IO, I will go do that, but it's harder to get, you know, your five or six improviser friends together on the one night.
Right.
And so that's a little bit tougher situation.
You know, for you, I always think about, you know, because you're such a talented guy and one of the best improvisers to come out of Chicago. I mean, the Annoyance Theater stuff and what you've done, you know, and all of the things that you've had success in Hollywood have really been off the fact that you've been such a tremendous, tremendous performer and comedian here in Chicago. I'm always interested, do you have to almost reinvent yourself to change disciplines when it comes to comedy? Do you have to start from the bottom up when you want to be a stand-up if you spent so many of your years dominating in an improv scene?
I'd say yes. A little bit of it informs the other one, and certainly improvisation helps you create material. That, in that regard, it's amazingly useful, because you might kind of have a premise in your head, and I'm not afraid to work it out on stage and find out where it goes, as opposed to I have to have it all scripted and written down and all the jokes there. I'm open to finding things, I guess.
Right. Yeah, talking to David Koechner, he is going to be in Arlington Heights with the show Symphony of Chaos on Saturday night at the Metropolis right there in downtown Arlington Heights. Tickets still available. I'm interested, you know, you have, I mean, eat with Superior Donuts and even with the Twin Peaks and movies that you're shooting. How often do you have time in your schedule to be able to put together a stand-up showcase? I mean, to like tonight, you said you're doing 15 minutes, three different clubs. I mean, how often are you on stage and not on a set?
Not often enough. It really is a tricky balancing act. This week, I decided I have to go up and get some reps in, out of respect to the people of Chicago and Into the Woods. But if I don't have a show coming up, I don't feel compelled to go do it. As you know, from the last time we talked, I've got a wife and five kids, so our house is very busy.
Right.
You know, tonight my wife is handling all the homework and dinner and everything else, and getting them, you know, showered and shampooed and teeth brush and in bed. It's a slog, man. You know, there's no doubt about it. So you can't have dereliction of duty on most nights of the week.
Yeah.
And on the weekends, honestly, I prefer, you know, to go on a date with my wife or hang out with the kids, you know, on a Friday night, watch movies and stuff like that. So it's a tough balance. And it really does depend on what my schedule is, by the end of the week. I don't have a lot of gigs coming up stand-up-wise because my fall is completely busy. And, you know, the beauty was I was able to come into Chicago last weekend for that George Wendt roast.
Right.
Fabulous. It was so much fun. So I'm going to Chicago 2 weeks in a row. So that's a rarity.
Right.
And so I just, you know, you learn to appreciate it.
As you get older as a performer and you know, the dynamics change from the days of you know, performing at the Annoyance Theater in Chicago, and does it become much more difficult?
Well, mostly the IO in Chicago. Actually.
Okay, at the IO in Chicago.
Yeah.
At the IO. I mean, just the idea that
IO at Second City. Yeah.
So you're at I.O. Second City Places. I mean, and it, has it changed? Obviously, with the dynamic changing as you get older and family, as you just mentioned, does it become much harder to play? Meaning, are the gigs that you find yourself gravitating to paid performances where you're like, I have to get paid. Like, the idea of going with your friends at I.O. in L.A., you're like, I'm going to go do this. It's like, no, that's not a paid gig. We're not playing
that's
anymore.
That's exactly it. That's exactly right. It's like, it's a Saturday night. And in fact, this happened. I don't know if I told you this last time, but we did a run of Beer Shark Mice every Saturday for 10 years at the I.O. West. And I remember when the twins were younger, I was leaving, I think, at 8:15 to get to the theater by, 8:45 and park and then get in there and, kind of get with the fellas and figure out, just get in touch, right? And I remember I'm leaving and the twins said, "Where are you going, Dad?" And my wife said, "Really, where are you going? Really? You and your improv buddies are going to put on a show for free and you have to pay for parking? It's costing you to go do a show? Really?" So at that point, it's kind of like, got to put down the gun.
Right. I mean, there is something. You're in a great position where, you're getting paid to perform and create and be a part of some great entertainment. That's why you're in Los Angeles. But I also at the same time, the honoring the craft and wanting to do things that are really a passion for you, they become more difficult to do just because of, just like all of us, life moves on.
That's true. You've got to make your choices. You've got to achieve that balance. You hope that you have enough experience in a body of work where you don't have to constantly be sharpening your knife, but you always appreciate it when you do. And I do believe that every time you get on stage, you get better. I really do believe that, and it'll always be that standard. But, the other side of the coin is, tomorrow I've got to go to work on Superior Donuts. So my duty is to work on my lines tonight.
Right.
And be prepared for tomorrow's show, that as well. And I've got to figure out, so tomorrow I've got to get up earlier than normal so I can get that time in.
For you,
the balance. Like, I couldn't go out every night and do stand-up and do a television show and be the best that I could be in both.
Yeah. How is it on Superior Donuts and doing the sort of traditional sitcom? I mean, to be a part of a sitcom as an improviser, as someone who, even in your movie work, we've talked about Anchorman, this idea that, there's a lot that goes on that's improvisation. You're able to play off of the relationships you've had with Adam and others in the past, all that whole crew. Talk about the difference of getting into a situation in Superior Donuts where you have to know your lines, you have to hit the right mark. That is professional work.
Yeah, exactly. And that makes you better as well, because you have to do all those things. You got to be in the right spot where the camera's going to pick you up, and you're not blocking another actor, and you're not upstage of them. You're basically putting on a play that's being filmed, which is exciting because we get to do it in front of a live audience, and you get that feedback, and you know if things are working or not. So that's invigorating. And you're working with 100 other professionals on this production, and everybody's got to do their job or the show doesn't come off as well as it could. And so you're just another piece of that production. You've got to be prepared and ready and do it, to the best of your ability. And now, as far as, there's not really room for improvisation because it's a scripted
right.
show. It's 21 and a half minutes long. It's timed down to the second. So you can't add lines or do things because then you're going to take, someone else is going to have to lose a line. That's
yeah.
just physics. That's the way it goes. So it's not, and it's not my show. I'm an ensemble member, happy to be there. Now, if, on show night, if you have an alternative line after we've done it a couple times and we're going to do one more pass, that's the time to pitch. Go, "Hey, have you thought about this? Maybe we just change this a little bit." And they do allow that sometimes, depending on how the night's going.
Right. The last thing I'll ask is just, I think it's amazing that you had a role in the new season of Twin Peaks. What was that like? I mean, that is considered to be, that is a whole different kind of television, to be able to work with David Lynch and that crew, to be able to do something that, has already had an indelible mark on pop culture in this country.
I tell you, it was really special. It was really special, and I'm so happy that I was given that opportunity, and to be part of something truly iconic was really quite a thrill. And the guys I got to work with, we've remained friends, and that, build on a friendship like that through a bonding experience like that was really, really pretty awesome. And, you know, when I auditioned for it, it wasn't even an audition. It was a meeting. You just met with a casting director, and they asked you questions. I wasn't even sure what the project was. It was called Rancho Rosa. And then a week later, my agent says, you've been cast in the new Twin Peaks. So they go, that's what that was. Okay. So it was really interesting. It's unlike anything I've ever done. It's unique. You know, you're not given the script. You're only given your pages the next day. I didn't even know what character I was going to play. So you just memorize everything that's on the page. And it changed every day I was there. And it was just a fantastic, invigorating experience.
Wow. David Koechner is on stage at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center out in Arlington Heights. He's there on Saturday night with the show Symphony of Chaos. It's at 7:30 p.m. You can find all the information online. David Koechner, one of the greatest Chicago improvisers to have come through, who's having a great career in Los Angeles. We continue to love watching you on stage and screen. Thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hey, brother. Thank you so much.
All right, coming up, John Doe from the band X. Gonna be at Riot Fest. How great is that? There's documentaries made. There's films. There's projects. There's books. There's Grammy. It's pretty amazing to have a guy of John Doe's caliber on the show. And I, you know, to be honest, Pete, you probably are more familiar with X than I am. But you know, I know the band, of course, because. You know, just being a fan of music, you're like, you know, that's an iconic name for a band. And I know the music a little bit, but in the last 2 days of listening to X, and not only that, but just reading their story, I mean, there was something special happening in the Los Angeles area when it came to punk music in the late 70s, early 80s. And we had Mike Watt in here. That was one of the conversations we had, but also bands like Henry Rollins and other great punk bands that were coming out of Dead Kennedys, right? I feel like, I mean, it's interesting because we've talked a lot about Chicago punk music, but it really seems like that's an identity and that's an area, late 70s, early 80s, that just we keep coming back to.
Mm-hmm. And again, your neighbors, are they wondering what's going on at your house? Because you guys, your music from Molly, the bass clarinet right. On Monday.
Jason Stein.
And now you're
on
listening
Monday.
To some punk, oh, LA punk.
No. LA punk on Wednesday.
What's going on at that house?
It's an eclectic block. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is going to be on stage at Riot Fest this weekend. One of the most influential punk bands in history. Douglas Park welcomes the band X. X is playing on Friday afternoon at Riot Fest. It's hard to believe the LA-based band that influenced hundreds of other punk bands just turned 40. They started back in 1977. John Doe is one of the founders of the band. He just put out the book called Under the Big Black Sun, a personal history of LA punk, which was nominated for a Grammy in the spoken word category. It features several of the musicians who came out of the late 70s punk movement in California. And like I said, John Doe and the band X on stage at Riot Fest this Friday. And he joins me now. John Doe, welcome to The Download.
I feel like that should be followed by, be there, be there, be there, be there, be there.
We could do that. We could do that. We have sound effects for that.
Like the race,
you know, like the racetrack,
right.
You know, the drag races used to be.
Sure, we
Sunday,
have
Sunday, Sunday.
I feel like we have the CD sound effects left over from those. We could do that if you'd like.
You could just put some reverb on what I just said.
Exactly.
Anyway, yeah.
So here we are. Let me ask you, what's it mean to be playing Riot Fest and coming through Chicago?
You know, Chicago's a great place. We played there recently, and I play there all the time. You know, Riot Fest is a, you know, it's a cool punk rock kind of festival. We've done it before. It's got some good stuff going on, you know. It's a better part of an ongoing tour. We've been doing it all years, and we're going to continue till the end of the year.
Here in Chicago, we are very proud of the punk rock scene that's come out of here. Bands like Naked Ray Gun and others who've come through Chicago's pipeline and brought a lot of success to punk bands. You are from the Mecca. I mean, when you talk about punk music, you talk about New York, you talk about L.A., but are you familiar and do you find yourself connected at all to the Chicago style of punk rock?
I'd have to say that I'm more connected to the alt-country style of Chicago music. You know, Nico and Wilco and yeah, people like that. I've played with more as a solo artist. I think in the early days, X probably played with Urge Overkill, at least once that I remember. But, you know, I mean, Chicago's a freaking big city, and it's got all kinds of music to come out of that.
Let's talk about X to celebrate the 40th anniversary here this whole year, of course, starting back in 1977. You came from Baltimore, and you also were familiar with the New York scene and were able to come to L.A. and find success. What were the differences? Because we all hear so much about the L.A. punk scene and the L.A. sound of punk music, all the bands that, you know, from X to Mike Watt and the other bands that were coming out of L.A. at the time. What was the difference? What was the style and the sound that made you guys unique?
Oh, I think we had a little more of the early rock and roll, Chuck Berry, Gene Vincent, Little Richard, Johnny Burnett, that kind of thing. I think there was something in L.A. sound that had a little bit more twang to it, a little more Western. Whereas New York had, were influenced by the Velvet Underground and maybe the Stooges. And, you know, London was more influenced by maybe T-Rex and David Bowie, which are all like innovators and all, you know, we all took a page from and then made our own hybrid out of it. But, you know, the early days of punk rock in any one of those three scenes, they're all very eclectic. You know, Blondie isn't like the Ramones or Talking Heads, and they were all part of the same scene. And the, you know, Clash isn't like Susie and the Banshees or some of the other bands. So it's, you know, and we weren't like the Germs or the Weirdos or the Plugs or some other bands that, you know, or the Go-Go's even.
Yeah. Go back to the original music that you guys were producing in the late 70s, and X is what we remember, but the album Los Angeles and others, this concept of painting a darker story or a darker picture of Los Angeles, because the rest of the country kind of knows the town as Tinseltown or maybe Hollywood and palm trees and beautiful weather, but there was something about what you were writing about in the music that you were producing that was telling a different story.
Well, that was all part of what we wanted to do. We wanted to put a stake in the ground and say, you guys have, you know, everybody else thinks that it's all Farrah Fawcett and the Eagles, but have you read Charles Bukowski or have you seen any of the, you know, 40s and 50s film noir movies and or have you listened to the Doors? You know, and then once like NWA and other, you know, Jane's Addiction, people like that, that came after us started putting out music, then everyone realized, oh, right. There was the Watts riots and then there was Rodney King and you know, some, you know what, hit the fan big time, you know, so you got a little more balanced picture of L.A.
You know, the music of X, as I mentioned in the beginning, was known as an influencer for a lot of punk bands that came through. But one of the great things about the band is as you move through the 80s is that you were able to change your sound and evolve your sound and bring in different elements of music and different genres and disciplines. Talk about that. Talk about the idea of moving away from that standard punk rock sound and incorporating new things, even when, you know, as you get further into the 80s, more people wanted that standard punk rock sound.
Well, we never strayed too far from playing punk rock music, but Billy and DJ and I all had earlier kind of extensive musical education. But when you start playing, you know, when you start defining punk rock, you got to draw a line and say, this is then, that was now, here's what we're going to do. As we went into our third and fourth record, we experimented with other instruments. You know, Billy plays sax and DJ plays vibes. And so nowadays we're actually using that on stage. We have another person who plays with us. So DJ does play vibes on a couple songs. Billy even plays sax on a couple songs. And so we get this crazy kind of like bookends of punk rock with a middle part, these weird deep cut things that we did because we could. You know, punk rock is all about freedom and just doing what the hell you please. So we did.
John Doe, my guest from the band X. They're on stage at Riot Fest coming up here on Friday. You know, X is one of those bands that everyone will point to and say, okay, these were the guys that influenced me as a punk rock musician, and I was able to take that and run with it and have success. Almost set up as almost ahead of your time, or the idea of not necessarily commercially successful, if you will. But when you get back on the road, when you do the 20th anniversary show at Tower Records in L.A., when you do other things that essentially bring X back out, there are thousands of people that come out of the woodwork. Have you changed your concept or your history or your recollection of the band being ahead of its time now when you have so many different people that come out to watch X or celebrate what you guys have accomplished?
I would say we're more grateful that young people, you know, 15, 16, or older people who are 50 or 60, find something to listen to. And whether we were ahead of our time or just part of a time that was, its time had come, you know, that's my theory on why it all happened so quickly. Why things happened in New York and then London and then LA and San Francisco and then Minneapolis and Ohio and stuff like that. It was just time. So whether we were ahead of our time or just part of a greater movement whose time had come, you know, we're just, you know, it's cool to hear that like Pennywise got inspiration from us. It's cool to hear that Green Day was inspired by us. You know, we're glad that we're playing and still all the original members, and who would have thunk it, right?
Right. Well, that's my next question is just about this 40th anniversary of the band. And you guys have had time where you've taken time off and gotten back together, but it's the original members. And so often in punk rock, you'll have a band go 3, 4, 5 years, maybe 10 if they're lucky, and they burn out. Or they say, we're going to go on to different projects, we're going to reset. What is the secret to the success of X and how you can retain the same original members to play 40 years after the fact?
First of all, nobody died. And as Billy Zoom would say, we never got rich enough to kill ourselves or retire, you know. So and we also, you know, we like each other. We think that our music has value, and it's like this is our career, you know, and that's cool. It's like cool to have a career where you don't have to wake up at 8 a.m. or know what day it is.
You know, working on
there are times. There are times, my friend. That I wake up and I go, "What freaking day is it?" Oh, that's right. It doesn't matter. Well, I'm going to get in the van and I'm going to go somewhere and play music.
There you go. That's you're living the life. The book Under the Big Black Sun: A Personal History of LA Punk, nominated for a Grammy, but also an ability for you to bring together a lot of voices from the LA punk scene to tell their story, to recall the times of from 77, 83, whatever it was. You have almost become the official historian of that time for that music, that influential music of that time. Is that important to you? Is that important to you as a musician who lived through it?
Sure. I think everyone who was part of that scene has a fierce loyalty to the legacy of that. But you know, maybe I'm the Ken Burns of L.A. punk rock.
There you go, right?
And I actually didn't want to be the authority. That's why I kind of, you know, I wrote a bunch of different chapters, and I also wrote a bunch of in-between stuff. But then I got, you know, Henry Rollins and Maxine and Dave Albin and Jane Weedland from the Go-Go's all to write chapters and tell their story regarding that subject, you know. And because I thought they were experts. And so you get a lot of different people's points of view, and it's all, each one is in the chapter form, so it's not just like this off-the-cuff kind of oral history, which is cool, but I just wanted something with a little more, like, context to show what the city was like and, you know, what life was like at that point.
Yeah. you know, as you're on stage at Riot Fest on Friday, like we said throughout the interview, the 40th anniversary of the band, what's next for you guys as the tour wraps up and you get a chance to really celebrate that 40th year? What's next? Do you see yourself sticking together? I mean, you do so much solo work and so much other work with other musicians. Do you guys all go in your own separate ways, or does X continue producing new stuff?
X will continue. We have a Kickstarter that's going on right now where we're going to give all these different things away, and we're producing mixing some live sessions that we did with Pearl Jam down in Latin America. You know, who knows? Might do some new stuff. Oh. Never know.
There you go. John Doe is one of the founders of the band X. They're on stage at Riot Fest this Friday, right here in Douglas Park in Chicago. His book, Under the Big Black Sun, A Personal History of L.A. Punk. John Doe, I can't thank you enough for taking some time out to talk to us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hey, man, it's a pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Honest to goodness, the bars were open this morning. They must have been voting for your president or something. Do you have a quarter? I said yes, because I did. Honest to goodness, the truth's been falling all over this country's face. It was better before they voted for what's his name.
Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Great to talk with John Doe. Coming up, Greg Flam at DuPage Picker. Oh, I got to go. I'm going to go into my Gmail and see if I could find the hip hop alderman pitch talking about last night. Throw it in there and swap meet. What's this worth? If you're joining us last night, I feel like the new show, The Mayor, on ABC. I need to find out who's producing the show and find out if it was someone who met with me about my idea in Hollywood, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, called Hip Hop Alderman. Classic. Right away, you're like, what the hip? I'm listening? It's a really good pitch. If I remember, really good logo, too. I think we made like a logo of what it was going to look like. Or just change the color of the text. I can't remember. Is one not necessarily a real high-tech venture for me to pitch an idea. But we'll find out. That's a good. I got to see where that's at. And still, I got so much gruff last week from my Mayor Daily poster that I had. I had the Mayor Daily poster, The Time for Leadership. And I said, hey, I'm willing to barter this. And there was someone on Twitter who said, oh, I'd love this. My friend or I had a friend or family member who worked for Mayor Daley, he'd love this, which I'm willing to give it to the person. You know, I was just kind of joking around saying, nah, it's not good enough. He had offered me a Michael Jordan poster and respond, love it. Love that. But then I got so many people the next day that were like, I think we were playing Never Have I Ever, I think it was, where they're like, Never Have I Ever tried to ditch a crappy poster from Mayor Daley on spot me. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then someone said, you know, you should give it to charity. Stop being such a greedy guy. I'm like, it's the bit of the swap meet.
Mm-hmm.
The idea, I mean, I would want that. If I were listening and the talk show host was like, I have this awesome poster of Mayor Daley. I mean, like combed hair and everything. Coiffed like a like a, you saw it's like a black kind of haircut, young Daley, almost like a 5 o'clock shadow.
Mm-hmm.
you, if I were listening, I'd be like, okay, what do I have? I want that. I'll give this guy my, I don't know, Rahm Emanuel, you know, glass.
My ballet slippers.
My ballet slippers. My bomber jacket.
Sarah Lawrence.
Stonewashed jeans that I got. Slim fit. Rahm Emanuel. When Rahm Emanuel was running for mayor, I always liked when he would go cash on the campaign and he had the bomber jacket. It was like almost like a leather bomber jacket, like almost like a tan. Like a roughed up, you know, scuffed up tan. And then like almost like a stonewashed tight pair of jeans. It's like, yeah, there we go.
He knows what he's doing.
He knows what's up. He's like, I can't go too stylish. I still got to keep it 80s real because it's Chicago. All right, we're going out to Berwyn this week for the next stop on the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate. Join me for a live broadcast of the download on Friday, September 15th, at Laverne's. Laverne's Tavern in Berwyn, 7 to 10. No need to travel to Munich because Bavaria comes to Berwyn with their annual Oktoberfest celebration, so we'll have a party going on. How great is that? Come on out, enjoy the special Oktoberfest-inspired menu and other specials at Laverne's Tavern. I'm excited about this, right? I was able to book today. I did my finally did my job, and I reached out to the bungalow tour. I've got the Berwyn Bungalow Tour. It's the 11th annual. It's coming up in a week. So I saw that, and randomly, I wasn't even looking at Berwyn stuff. I just saw it in my feed, and I was like, oh, that's perfect, right? Talk about the bungalow. So they're in. People from the Berwyn Historical Society going to come down and talk about it. How great is that? Visit the events page at WGNradio.com for details. WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands.
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
Here we are.
Building, it's time for Swap Meet. 312-981-7200. This is a segment we do every Wednesday night where we evaluate your memorabilia, your collectibles, your junk. We said 312-981-7200. Right. I already got people on the line tonight. Text coming in. Greg, how are you, my man?
I'm doing great, thanks.
How was this week? It was a good week?
Great weather. Right. You know, flea market at Wolf's was great. Sunday. Saturday, I did Treasure Days in Bridgeview. They do town-wide, and they split it in half. So I did Southside Bridgeview on Saturday, and I
the whole town is like becomes
yeah,
like
it's
one
like
big
every
garage
other
sale.
House is like a garage sale.
Awesome.
So I mark it on my calendar every year. They do this in September. Next weekend is the north side of Bridgeview.
Awesome.
North of 79th Street. Yeah. So I did that on Saturday, and of course, Wolf's on Sunday.
What did you find? Did you find anything?
You know,
good in Bridgeview?
I found some pretty cool stuff, and I have to give a shout out to Rita and her daughter. I was able to buy this 1964 John Lennon doll.
And, it's like a little bobblehead.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it looks like a bobblehead. It's just kind of a caricature, but it's like a rubber, soft rubber body. But yeah, this is probably about $75 to $100, and she sold it to me, so that was cool. And this is even more rare. This is a Charlie Watts of the Rolling Stones 1963 rubber doll.
Wow, rubber doll night.
Yeah, and I got both of them at the same sale, and this one's about 125 and up, you know. So who would have thought Charlie Watts beat out John Lennon? But they just made so many of these, that's why. You know, it's just kind of drives the value down.
Interesting.
And I brought a couple guitar picks I had of U2. One was actually played by Bono in Montreal, and I have a friend who's on the crew gave me this one. But this one I got to get a sale, a flea market or something last year.
How do you know at that point when you're in a flea market, they're like, Bono played with this pick?
Well, yeah, the one that's played I got from Rocco Reedy, who is the guy that hands Bono the microphone before he goes up on stage.
All right.
So I can be assured that that is actually played.
What about the other one?
The other one, I can't be sure, but it's from the Super Bowl, 2002 Super Bowl picks that they did, commemorative picks. So it's kind of cool.
Commemorative picks.
Yeah, it's got the Super Bowl logo on it and the Edge signature on the back, which isn't a live signature, but it's a printed signature on there. So it's kind of cool.
I love that someone came up with that idea.
Yeah,
we need commemorative picks.
Right. Yeah, and I'm wondering, like, what do rap groups hand out? You know, obviously, like, you got crew just, like, flicking right. out these pics. And I was like, what do rap groups kind of
commemorative
flick
necklaces.
Yeah, like, right. so it's like gold yeah. chains or
gold
something.
Chains. Yeah. All right, and you have, wow, this yeah. is amazing. You have a poster in studio. This is, we, of course, continue our awesome
weekly
Bears poster. So we've had so many. This is just a photo. A framed, how big is this thing? This thing's huge.
Probably 24 by 36, I'd say.
So it's an old, it's a photo, and it looks like, I mean, this is awesome. Look at this thing. It is the old Soldier Field.
Yep.
So you've got the artificial turf.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a shot from the end zone. So it's one of these things
south
where,
end zone.
South end zone.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking north, you see the Sears Tower there, Prudential Building. There's no Trump Tower.
No Trump Tower.
The awesome scoreboard. Is has the great look at this? Got RC on it. Is
yep.
that RC?
Yep. And
Winston.
Yep.
Cigarettes.
And the clock.
And the clock
is Elgin.
Is Elgin clock?
Elgin clock. Yeah.
And it's the old. I mean, look how many people
yeah,
are in
and
this
it's
bowl.
Packed.
They're playing the Redskins. It looks like.
Yeah. And
and you could tell it's not the playoff game because you got people down in the right here with everyone's wearing t-shirts or no shirts.
Right. No shirt
which
here.
Still could be a. Big thing.
You got cheerleaders down there where they just
oh the honey bears yeah
after
but the, it's amazing too Greg because look at the if you look at the shot there's so much wide open space
yeah you never would see that much open space at an NFL game
and it's the old yeah. artificial turf so yeah. you know that like in about 10 minutes somebody blows their knee out
yeah so for not having a star you know any like bear star
yeah.
focused on this poster there's so much to take in
it really is just a snapshot of 80 yeah. Chicago and you know what's really awesome about it is that wherever the person took this photo from all the way in the south end zone the vendor
right it's coming up
is coming up right towards the camera this is really cool I like this a lot
yeah and it, so
it's like a snapshot of Chicago
yeah and there's not much credit to it it just says Chicago by and I can't make out this my eyesight's going but there's a name I'm just assuming it's the person's name that took the photo
you know there's always been the I guess it's not an urban myth but it's they know it to be that when they renovated Soldier Field back in what 2003
mm-hmm.
they made it smaller actually to put in more skyboxes and whatever
skyboxes,
it actually
right.
made it smaller like there's less people that can fit in because when you look
yep.
at this you're like wow look at all the people
yeah,
that are
you
in
got
here.
Both facades
yeah
you know
and I have to say that I remember right before I think it was the 2002 season whenever the season was maybe 2001 because they'd had a season off to build it
mm-hmm.
that one of the last games my wife went to the we were not married yet we were she was working in the merchandise mart right and they had a coconuts classic
nice
In the coconuts, they had a Ticketmaster. And so you could go up to the Ticketmaster and be like, you got any Bears tickets? And they're like, beep, boop, boop, beep, beep, boop, beep, boop. And they would come out. And it was regular price, and you could just buy. I don't think you could do that now. But the idea that you could just go to a coconuts
right.
and be like, what do you got for Bears? And they bring out the old, you know, seating chart,
yep.
in the yellow, red, blue.
Right.
And she got tickets, and we're like, this is great. You know, we'll go to this game. It was against Tampa. It was a Dick Geron year that they went to the playoffs and with an A-train. And we kept walking. I think it said it was, you know, aisle 11 or whatever. Kept walking. It was the front row.
That's crazy.
Where you could put your nachos and your beer on the brick wall.
Yeah, brick wall, right.
And my favorite part about it, I'm like, maybe these aren't great seats because, you know, the players kind of block, you know. But so I remember being the smart aleck that I am, I was like, Mike Brown, right?
Yep.
And he turns around because you're right there. And
right.
you're like, I've got nothing to say.
Right,
I just wanted to say your name because you're standing right in front of me with your name. It was just crazy. I was like, I can't believe this is a thing in sports. And then they renovated it and took it away.
Yep.
So now they're not even that close. So anyway.
You landed a UFO on it.
So 312-981-7200. If you bought your tickets from Coconuts, now, if you have anything that you bought from Coconuts on the swap meet tonight, let's start off. Let's get right to it. Why don't we do that tonight?
Yep.
Why don't we start off with Terry? Terry, what do you want to brag about, Terry?
Well, I'm actually calling for my son who's out of town on business. He wanted me to ask you about these three game systems. One is PlayStation DualShock System.
Okay.
And then the other one is a Nintendo Entertainment System action set.
Right, the first Nintendo NES, right?
And then, I don't know. don't get technical on me.
Okay.
Coleco video game system with expansion modules 1 and 2.
Wow. Yeah, those are
Coleco.
All the vintage, early, in-demand systems now. If I had to rank them, your Nintendo NES, if it's in the box and mint, you're looking 150 to 250 in the box with all the cables, everything. Coleco would be the next one, probably 75 to 150. And then PlayStation 1, that DualShock system, maybe 100, 150.
Isn't Coleco, didn't they have like the Millipede game? Wasn't there a Centipede game?
Yeah, there was Centipede.
There?
They had Donkey Kong.
Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a lot of games for them too.
Terry, were you? Are you?
That helps.
Were you one that would sneak down and play Centipede while no one was looking? No,
not even like bowling or.
No, I didn't. He didn't. He played them with his kids. He's got grown kids in college now. That's probably why he wants to know what these are worth and get rid of them.
Yeah. Do you know if he has the boxes or not, or are they out of the box?
That I don't know either. I'll ask them.
Yeah.
You know, it makes a big difference then, right?
Yeah. If they're in the box, your Nintendo NES could be upwards of 200, all 250.
Right. I got a hunch they're in the box, though, because they were pretty careful with what they hid.
That's good.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Terry.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Really interesting, too. I mean, I feel like I wanted to make a big deal because I had a Super Nintendo. Still have it.
Yep.
It's not in the box, Greg.
Right.
It's one controller. Wires frayed.
Mm-hmm.
one of the buttons doesn't work.
Can I just finish your stuff for you? Like, you bring it up and I'll just finish it. Okay, it's kind of crumpled. It's not working.
I have Duck Hunt, but you have to blow on it to make it work.
right. Yep.
Right. 312-981-7200. We're swap meet tonight. We'll take a quick break and we will line everybody up. If you've got a question, you want to brag about what you got, now's the time. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a swap meet sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. 312-981-7200. Phone number that you can call, you can text. You can evaluate your memorabilia, your collectibles, your junk. Let's get right to it. Let's go to Pat. Pat, what do you want to brag about, Pat?
I'm bragging about a silver set that I have. Ooh, it's silver. Over 100 years old. It's made by Tiffany. And it's got the 20-inch round oval silver bottom.
Wow.
And a coffee pot, a teapot, a waste bowl, a sugar, a creamer.
Wow.
And it's got one of those lights that you light a match to, a round thing in the bottom.
Right.
And then it's got a holder with a – you can have warm water in there or whatever to – lighten coffee or tea.
Right. Wow. You're all set.
Is silver one of those materials or that you can't eat on anymore? Like, is it like the lead of the 20th century? Like, I feel like it used to be like an important thing. Like, oh, you have silver, but I'll bet you it gets you sick, right? It has to at some point.
Oh, I don't know because I haven't used it.
Yeah, right. I'm sure they've figured it out over the years. But I'm saying, like, the idea of a 100-year-old, you know, silver kind of collection.
Right, and same thing with toys. Right. You know, what they made lead out of. You know, had
is there such a thing as silver poisoning? I mean, not in mercury poisoning.
Yeah, I never heard of that.
Well, I don't. I've never heard of silver poisoning.
Well, you know what? I'm because I'm so rich. And I have so much silver, I'm very aware of silver poisoning. But no, go ahead.
Right. We digress. No, a complete set has gone for upwards of like $3,000. So,
there you go.
Is that all?
Yeah, I mean, that's
more than that.
Yeah, it might be, but that's what I'm seeing like recent sold prices as for a complete set.
My.
Yeah, but it might be more. Obviously, you know, you have to see it and all the details.
And I used to write to Tiffany's all the time and get a cost number for the set, and it was going up in price. $3,000 low.
Okay.
Wow.
Big
time.
If you want to send a picture of your set, I'd be happy to try to get a better price for you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, sometime. How would I do that? Because I don't
just
have
your Facebook. DuPage Picker at Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay. Facebook or Twitter.
Thank you.
Thanks
for
calling.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. 414 says, no, it's lead on very old china. That'll get you.
Okay.
Yeah, just think like at some point when you're making silverware, things to eat on, and there's science is only at a certain point, and you're like, I'm going to eat off this lead plate.
Yep.
And then you're like, I don't know why my family keeps dying at 25.
Yeah.
It must be the times. Right, we've adapted, right? So I feel right. like silver will be the next one. Like, you know all that really fine china and silver that you collect? Don't eat on it.
Right. Just look at it.
Yeah. Right, let's go to Jeff. Jeff, what do you want to brag about, Jeff?
Hey, guys. Hey. So a while back, I went to a garage sale, and I picked up SNES Legend of Zelda in mint condition in its original case with the cellophane and everything. So at that time, I kind of did a little research, and I think on eBay, it was listed for around $300 to $400. Wasn't sure if it still held its value or where it's at right now.
Yeah, Zelda is always a good find. If you find them at garage sales, pick them up for any platform, Super NES, NES, whatever, PlayStation, anything, pick it up because it usually will pay off. I'm trying to find here. You said Super Nintendo you had that version?
Yeah, the original one, Super Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah.
In its original casing, still wrapped in its original cellophane.
One recently.
Some kind of distinction, yeah.
Yeah, one recently sold for $514 sealed, like you said. So, yeah, right. So that's a good price.
Is this the one Nintendo, like the classic Zelda, where they're like diddly 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 diddly?
Yep, the first one. And
I love that one.
But anything Zelda since then, it seems to do well.
And when you would get into a certain part, like deep into the, and move a stone, and you get to go into a cave, and it was like the music would get ominous, like,
right.
That was the best.
Yeah, but it's still,
you know. I tried to get my son into Zelda because they still have Zelda on some of the Wii U and things like that. It's so complicated.
I never played it. It's so hard. It's a good find to flip. But yeah, that's an awesome one. Do you have any other games that are like that, in that condition, sealed or anything?
No, that was the only
one.
The lady that sold it had mentioned that her son had two copies. Uh-huh. He had played with one of them. The other one was kind of kept off to the side, and she just kind of accidentally sold it.
Yeah. Can I ask what you paid for it at the garage sale or where you found it?
$1. I paid $1 for it.
Yeah, that's good what I'm talking about.
There we go.
All right. Awesome.
Well,
thanks Jeff.
Good find.
All right. There we go. 312-981-7200. Let's see. 773 wants to know, is there a website to check the value of Beanie Babies? We get this question a lot about how much certain Beanie Babies cost because there are ones that are like the top dogs, right? The one that's like, it's an Uncle Sam Beanie Baby. That one's for $5,000.
Yeah, they're the needle in the haystack type.
Right. But the one with the cowboy hat's worth 15 cents.
Right, and with the hand maybe twisted a little bit to the right. Yeah. There's two websites. One's called TieCollector.com, and the other one is LoveMyBeanies.com. And they list the current values.
So they'll list like, so there's what? How many of them are like the Holy Grail? 10 or so?
Probably 10, 15 maybe. And
then was it because they had, they didn't make enough of them or what was?
Yeah,
why,
it's
kind of
like
so
where
bad?
They were made. Maybe there was a misprint. I guess one of the anomalies or whatever are the spacing between the paragraphs and the tag. You know, there's all these like five different layers. And there's a website out there that if you look up how to tell if your beanie is one of the whole.
They still make Beanie Babies. I mean.
I don't know about that.
I don't know if they make Beanie Babies, but there's still a style of. Like if you go into the airport, for instance, I was at Midway not too long ago, and they have a whole stand of these kind of plushy little guys that are like Beanie Baby, either wannabes or cousins.
Similar materials that they use, right? They're still out there. I have this feeling that like in 10 years, whatever, 10, 20, 30 years, they're going to come back because like someone's going to invent a game that you need the physical Beanie Baby.
Smart idea.
Like kind of what they do with Pokemon Go.
Right, right.
You know, so I think they're going to, you know, that's my thought is how that craze is going to come back because there's too many of them out there not to put them to use.
You climb the Sears Tower at the top is like the Statue of Liberty Beanie Baby.
Right.
Right on your phone.
Right. But
then they throw a festival and it doesn't work because the Wi-Fi doesn't work. I got it all figured out. We're going to see what happens, right?
Yeah, we got to fix that Wi-Fi problem there. But yeah, in general, they're about 50 cents to a dollar. You can get most of them at any garage sale or flea market.
All right, let's keep going. 312-981-7200. 815 says, I have a first edition Salvador Dali Jerry Garcia tie never worn.
Okay.
That's awesome. I was like, a tie-dye? Oh, a tie.
I had a Jerry Garcia tie I've been trying to sell forever at the flea market. Finally, I just gave it away.
So this is a first edition Salvador Dali, though.
Yeah, but it wasn't the Dali, yeah. It
yeah, was just so, Jerry Garcia. I mean, I'm just letting you know, this one might be a little bit more better than the one you had, right. Greg.
Maybe. Let's see.
What does a tie go for? I mean, is there a lot of fervor around collectible ties?
Like, I guess silk ties, you know, get decent money out of
it. Like the Huey Lewis kind of tie that's also like keys to a piano?
Right, there you go, or a keytar tie.
Right. Right. What is a Jerry Garcia?
Looking that up. You don't know. Let's see.
I'll just venture a guess. Yep. $1,200.
Can't find the Dali one.
Yeah.
I've got Jerry Garcia. The most expensive Jerry Garcia is about $14, $20.
All right, there you go.
But Dali, I couldn't find that one. So
there you go. Well,
I'm sure he's got something good there, though.
312-981-7200. Greg Flamm, at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter, in studio as he is every Wednesday for the swap meet. Like I said, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break, and we will line up a new batch of callers and texts, and we will get the news from Rob and the traffic from Esmeralda coming up here on the Download 720 WGN. Stay with us.
Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flamm.
Here we are. Bring your junk.
There you go. Bring your junk. 312-981-7200. The swap meet sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Tonight we are evaluating your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. 312-981-7200. Greg Flamm joins us every Wednesday at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Let's go to Jerry. Jerry. Hey, Jerry. How you doing, bud?
Good.
All right. So what do you got? What do you want to brag about?
I think I have one of a kind, an old-fashioned icebox. It's made out of oak, golden oak, and it where the ice block used to be is a compressor, so it actually works as a cooler. And I redid the outside with three coats of golden oak, redid the nickel fittings and latches. They were nickel, and re-chromed the inside. So it's kind of a one-of-a-kind type of item.
Okay.
Wow. I do, too.
I'm not sure how one-of-a-kind is. I'm finding so many of them, at least a half dozen here.
But not refurbished in that way.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like that's kind of the end thing to do now. So one just sold recently for about $1,000, $2,000, another one here, $1,500. So it seems like that's kind of the thing to refurbish.
Jerry, you're a trendsetter. They've already, you know what? They probably saw you and tinkering with it somewhere, and they're like, let's do what Jerry does.
Right, yeah. And there are different sizes, of course. So he might have a one of a kind of that his size or model or you know shape of it or whatever the doors. But yeah, if you look it up on eBay, there's quite a few.
Yeah, there you go, Jer.
Yeah, okay. I was thinking, you know, this size is 6 foot tall.
Okay,
6 foot tall.
That it might be, you know, worth in about $7,200.
Okay, I'll try to find a 6 foot tall one, but
so you already know is the swap meet becoming like Price is Right, where you guys just already know what the price is and you're hoping that Greg says it.
Well, I have a debate with my sister-in-law.
Oh, I see. There you go.
Yeah, one that was about 5 foot was $1,000, but I'm sure yours is worth more than that. I'm just saying. The 5 foot one.
That's just sold. Tell her that we said $71.99.
Right.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, thanks, Jared.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Tell her $1.
Right. What's the Avalanche episode or segment they do?
Let's all play Plinko.
Right.
All right, Jenna. Jenna, what do you want to brag about, Jenna?
Oh, nothing to brag about. I'm curious on the value of three
Nightmare Before Christmas dolls from 1993. They're the original Hasbros.
Those are braggable.
Oh, well, thank you. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious on the value of those. I acquired them about 15 years ago.
Okay.
So they're dolls. Are they like action figures? Or are they bigger than that?
They're bigger than that. The Jack Skellington one is about 24 inches. Mm. It's a plush doll in a big box with a cellophane cover.
And then what's the other one, the skeleton dog?
No, the other one would be Sally.
Okay, right.
And the other one I have is Sandy.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I'm seeing a few sell in the box for about $40 to $50. And but there are people asking way more than that, but I'm just looking at the actual sold listings. And I have a Jack Skellington in the box, $40 plus $10 shipping.
All right, so that's not that much.
Well, thank you.
All right.
No problem.
Thanks, Jenna. I would I don't know. I wonder about that stuff. When you start talking about dolls and like merchandise around popular movies of our time, does the price come down, meaning because it hasn't been enough years that it's a
right? That's true. Usually the longer the time goes on,
like if
the
I had a plush doll there. Like that from Guardians of the Galaxy, if I had like a Groot doll, that wouldn't be worth anything
right now. Maybe not. Yeah, you might want to hold on to that.
But the problem is that it won't even matter because they just keep making sequels every year.
Right, that's
so
true.
It'll be like, so you have a Groot doll. Who cares? Everybody has one.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Star Wars thing. The newer stuff post-90 isn't as worth as the 70s, 80s Star Wars items. So.
Mostly for the cool Harrison Ford haircut of Harrison Ford, of Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
773 says, I have two Cabbage Patch dolls still in the box, never touched. Never touched.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. So you just didn't play with them? I thought the whole idea was that you got it out and you said, oh, it's got adoption papers. I'll call it.
Nuna. Well, the thing with Cabbage Patch is right away out of the gate, they were the hot toy. So people were smart enough to say, hey, this is the hot toy. I'll put this away and I'm not going to touch it. Where, you know, you see the toys from the 70s or 80s, they become hot, but they weren't out of the gate hot, so people played with them, and that was the problem there. But Cabbage Patch in the box are going for $50 to $120, I'm seeing.
Okay, that doesn't seem like a lot. Like, I would think, like,
I know,
you would think more, like $1,000 or something.
Again, but I think the craze, they made so many of them. That was the problem.
In that form, you could buy three, right? So you can essentially sell two and then buy three.
Right. And for those people who are going to buy them at a garage sale, like just a doll, try to find the dolls that there was adoption papers that came with them. So try to make sure that is with the doll, that it will help the value.
I feel like I missed that. I was a boy, so it might have been an issue. But I feel like that I just missed the Cabbage Patch craze. I was more of a Garbage Pail Kid guy.
Yeah. I think I was too old for the Garbage Pail, but I remember the Cabbage Patch craze.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Corey. Corey, what do you want to brag about?
I have it's a Civil War Union Army officer's mess kit. It's a knife and fork set with wooden handles that, like the fork and the knife slide into each other's handles.
Yeah, right on.
Like one. I have no idea what something like that would be worth.
So it's essentially like silverware, like wooden silverware from the Civil War.
Well, the knife and forks themselves are metal. The handles are wooden.
Right.
Yeah, there's one that went for $105. It looks like it had the knife, fork, the wooden handle, and one other piece I can't see. But yeah, they got $105 for that. That's probably about the highest one listed, but I'm sure, you know, because it only goes back about 6 months, so there might have been something before that went higher.
Yeah, but you're talking about 100, 150 Civil War money. So that's really like $10 million.
Right, there you go. And then we woke up.
Thanks, Corey. That's a good one. I like
it
that.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
I like that, too. And, you know, like I'm thinking of the old camping, you know, when the silverware kind of goes together like
right.
that. I have a story where when I was like maybe 14, my parents took us to the Glacier Park. Is it Glacier Park in Montana? Right, the big?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we were up way in the woods camping, and we had one of those, and it was kind of stuck. I was trying to figure it out. I was like, yeah, I found it. And I put the fork through my hand.
Oh, nice.
And it was sort of like shock, like I can't believe I did it. But we were out in the middle of nowhere. So like my dad just had to kind of like treat it and hope I didn't like have a hole in my hand forever.
Yeah.
It worked out. I don't even see a mark anymore. Oh, boring. Oh, there it is.
That's great.
It's still there.
All right.
Let's go to Rob. Rob, what do you got, Rob? What do you want to brag about?
Well, not so much bragging. I'm a little curious. I inherited a crystal or detailed glass. It's a log cabin. I've only found a picture of it twice online. Look, and once was on a picture of antique crystal, and the other one was in a real expensive auction house that you had to become a member of.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's a log cabin. The whole lid comes up. The chimney is actually the lid, and the whole roof is the lid.
Okay.
And the base, instead of four legs, it's a single base, and the base, it looks like a tree. You know, it's etched like to where it looks like a tree. And the cabin's really detailed. And my grandmother always used it as a candy dish.
Right. And there's a handle on one side, right?
There's no handle on it. The only way to lift the lid off is by the chimney.
Okay.
And I've seen them on, you know, the only two pictures I ever saw. One, the chimney was broke.
Okay.
But, and the other one was in pristine condition, but it was on a picture of an antique book.
Okay.
And they called it a compote.
Hmm.
I mean, I always considered it a candy dish. But the whole thing stands about 12 inches tall.
Okay.
Like I said, it's a beautiful log cabin. And I mean,
I like your description from last week,
I've been trying to look for a picture that I could send in because the camera on my phone, obviously, is broke, unfortunately.
Hmm.
But
well, they got the new iPhone X.
It's gotta be like 70, 80 years old.
That's awesome.
Right. Now, I can't find the one you're describing. The only other one had the handle, and that went for $130, but it did have kind of a gold chimney top. Very similar to what you described, just a handle on one end of it.
Hmm. No, this had no handle. It's rectangular.
So we have to
log cabin, and like I said, the base is a tree.
Okay.
You know, and it's clear glass. You know, it's crystal colored.
Robert, we have to figure out. Here's what we have to figure out: whether or not the handle makes it more valuable or less valuable. Right? That's what we got to figure out.
Well, I'm going to say his is more valuable. Than the one here with the candle, but you might want to try some kind of an antique dealer and bring that in and have them look at that. Or you can send me a picture of it at Facebook, and I'll look it up and try to do some homework on
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it. All right, let's keep going here. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Mario. Mario, what do you want to brag about, Mario?
How you doing there? I kind of want to brag, but remember... Remember when when the Star Wars movie came out, Episode One?
Okay.
Pepsi was they made these cans out like every single every single character from the movie,
right.
And I guess you could get all of them, but it was one specific can. It was a gold Yoda can, and I got one of them. And it's still full.
Wow. Still full of Pepsi. Gross.
I don't want to drink it.
Don't drink that. First off, Tony Breckwinkle will find you and tax your quarter, so watch out for that.
That's right.
What do you think about a collector's can from Star Wars that's gold, a gold Yoda that has Pepsi in it?
A gold Yoda can.
It looks like recently one sold for about $53.
Wow, that's bad. That's good.
Yeah, and another one was quite a bit less. And it was still sealed like yours. It says sealed. I don't know if they actually had the soda still in it, but, you know, I know some, the cannery places, what do they call? They'll do dry runs, where they won't put the fluid in there, but they'll seal the can and give them to employees to collect.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I ran into someone at a garage sale with they had the 7-Up cans where if you put them together, they made the picture of Uncle Sam. If you put like these 52 cans together, they made a picture of Uncle Sam. But yeah, you're probably in the $50 to $100.
Not bad for a can of pop.
Right.
Thanks, Mario.
Not bad. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break here. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the Swap Meet. We've got Barb. I've got a bunch of texts I want to get to as well. Swap Meet with Greg Flamm. Stay with us. All right, Greg Flam in as we wrap up the swap meet tonight. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Barb. Barb, what do you want to brag about, Barb?
Hi, I have an original Singer sewing machine in the cabinet, and it's one of the first electrical Singer machines.
Yeah, I like it. Does it work?
I don't know. I'm afraid to plug it in because of the plug.
Right.
I just have a feeling wiring. You could probably sell that to a hipster couple, and they'd be like, look at my antique sewing machine. It's also our counter. Got a lot going on there.
Right. I'm trying to find, since you don't know the year, it makes it harder, but I looked up first electric, and looks like about $225,
$230. That's not so bad. I don't know what you paid for it.
Yeah.
It was my grandmother's.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's...
It's an heirloom. I mean, it's been passed down. Well, down to the family.
I'd plug it in and see what happens.
Is it mostly a black black color?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what these look like, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yep, so $225.
Thanks, Barb. $225. I'll take that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take that, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. 773 says, hey, I have the original Saba, the talking sword. Is that a thing? What is that?
Don't know, but I'm looking it up now.
Saba, S-A-B-A, like the rapper, the West Side rapper. Saba.
Yeah, there's...
He's really good, too.
There's quite a few in the $40 to $50 range. Let me see what they're actually
Was it like a
selling.
Superhero kind of thing? Or
yeah, it looks like kind
I
of a...
Saba, this is my sword!
Yeah, it was Power Rangers associated.
Oh, there it is. Power Rangers!
Yep. And in the box, the most expensive one sold for about $100.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. 630 says, I have a 1931 Martin four-string tenor guitar used in the 1960s coffee houses during the folk singing era. If I gave my love a cherry. Isn't that the Animal
Scarborough
House?
Scarborough
Fair. Yeah, where he grabs a guitar and slams it against the wall.
Right. Animal House.
It's not so interesting.
What I gave my love. A flower. What was the other modern, like 80s movie that did that? Where he smashed the guitar. Is it one of those John Cusack movies?
Right. What do you got for a 1931 Martin four-string tenor guitar?
Yeah, 1931 making it a little tough for that exact year, but...
That was a tough year. It was a down year.
Yeah.
For guitars, for tenor guitars.
Right. Not a vintage year for them, yeah. I'm going to have to say 200 to 500 right. somewhere in there, so not bad.
All right, there you go. 847 says, I have a Mickey Mini from Disney World, mid-70s. I'm assuming...
Yeah, that's
like a,
so
like
much.
A, like a stuffed animal?
Yeah, there's so much stuff made that I can't. Yeah, send a picture if you can. I'll get you a price.
There you go. All right, keep going. 773 says, I have a poster. I have the Chicago Times poster. Mm-hmm. This is a classic. And I saw this in the window. There was a store. There was like a pop-up kind of souvenir shop in my neighborhood, and they had this one in a frame. Mm-hmm. But it was Chicago Times. It's the Class for All Seasons poster. And it's got in tuxedos, you got Michael Jordan, young Michael Jordan, holding a basketball. Then you got an Andre Dawson holding a bat.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got sitting down Walter Payton holding a football. Mm-hmm. All in tuxedos, all looking sharp.
Yep.
That's a classic.
It is, and because it's a classic, everyone has one, so it's about $40 tops.
What?
You know? Yeah, in great condition, $40.
I don't buy that.
Yep.
It's bogus.
Sad as it is.
I could have swore when I went past the souvenir shop and they had it on the easel, they wanted $200 for that thing. Next to it, which I always loved. I don't think the store is there anymore. It was on Madison Street. But it had this poster, right, the Chicago Times. And then next to it had a poster, I think it was signed, of Eastbound and Down, Danny McBride. Hmm. So like you said, Danny McBride's signature, and it was the cover of Eastbound and Down where he's like Kenny Powers and his... Eyes are like he's got the sunglasses on. But,
I'm lost there.
Oh, are you kidding me? You never seen that show?
I'm.
Come on, Greg.
I'll go home and look it up.
That's a great show.
I'll report back to you next week.
All right. McDonald's 815 has McDonald's stuffed toys from the 80s. Wondering what they're worth. They're like little stuffed animals of Ronald McDonald and Grimace. They've got a picture here. And Hamburglar.
Yeah, they're about $50, $40, $50 in great condition.
The actual, just one of them, or you got to have the set?
Just, I know the Ronald McDonald can be about 40.
Really?
Yeah, I've had a few of those.
Which
same
is the
thing
one?
With the Burger King guy.
Okay, so you got Hamburglar, you got Grimace, you got Ronald. Which is the lady? The girl?
It was a bird. I think it was a bird.
Yeah, it was a bird? Like a chicken?
Yeah, it was a chicken of some kind. Hmm. Yep.
I missed that. I don't know. Yeah.
And going into Halloween season, some of the McDonald's Halloween plastic toys are about 3 inches tall. Those are going for about $30, $40 for about 7 or 8
really?
Of them. Yeah. So.
630 says they got a cool mid-century modern dresser, mm-hmm. matching nightstand. Not sure if they're worth anything, this brand. Unagusta. Unagusta.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Really?
$600 to $1,500 that brand. The dresser. Just the dresser alone was that. So
wow. Well, there you go. Great. Another great swap meet, Greg.
Yep.
As always, at DuPage Picker, both at Facebook and Twitter. This is my favorite thing. This Soldier Field picture is just like, and the way you have it positioned in the studio, it's like I'm looking into the vast sky on the outside of Soldier Field. I love it.
Yep.
We're going to interview, we have Otis Wilson coming up, the famed linebacker. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you could see him on the sidelines in this picture, like warming up. Brings back good memories.
Yeah. I'm wondering if it's Washington, if that was the playoff game. What was that, 77?
It can't be. Well, 77. I mean, the playoff game, they beat them in 83, and then they beat them in, or not 84, right? They beat the Redskins in 84.
Early 80s, okay.
And then they lost to the Redskins in 86.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They beat Joe Theismann in the, anyway, what are we talking about?
Right.
So let me tell you, Greg, right. The history of playoff football. Always great to see you, buddy.
Yeah,
see you next
good.
Wednesday. Another awesome episode of the Swap Meet. That's going to do it for the download tonight. Coming up tomorrow night, Scott Drury's going to join us. He's running for governor, Democrat representative from Highwood, Highland Park, Northbrook, that area. He is a Democrat. And we will continue our series. I'm naming the series. You want to be governor? That's a.
What do you want to do that for?
Why would you? What?
You know that's what? Hilarious. I'm going to throw my hat into the ring.
Yeah, me too. There you go.
Let's do it as a joint.
Let's do it. Let's
there you go.
Co-run.
Can you do a co-run?
Well, one of you will have to decide to be a lieutenant governor.
Oh, no. We're going to redo this. We're going to be co-governors.
Justin, I'm announcing my candidacy as well tonight.
Lord. Okay, good.
This will be my last update.
Okay. Governor, thank you.
But like the best part about politics is you can still run and then come back and do updates. You know what I mean? Like you don't have to give anything up.
You can do all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be covenors, co-governors.
There you go.
We're covenors and witches, apparently.
Jen Bosworth and Amy Guth in tonight for Patty Vasquez. What do you guys got going on? Good to see you.
Well, apparently we're launching a political campaign.
Yeah, I
we're
love it.
We're going to start with that.
In strong
between,
start.
We're going to have debates with Rob.
That's smart.
And then
I'm really a nerd for space and plants, so I got to talk about both of those things. But in particular, there's a very interesting story right now happening. There is a satellite that's been orbiting Saturn for years and years. It's going to be purposely crashed on Friday.
It's a suicide mission.
And NASA is live tweeting its demise, and people are getting emotional about it and saying goodbye. It's a very sweet little story. And it's interesting. The reason they're doing it is because it ostensibly has like earthbound microbes on it. So whatever it hits, it could disrupt. You know, disrupt the microbial system. So they decided the humane thing
it's
to
a
do
samurai situation.
For the good of the entire universe is to just crash that turkey right in. And as it's going out, it's going to get the most fascinating data and photos really quickly.
Really
the
close.
Last minute
wow.
of Saturn's ring. So it's
it causes
be
me anxiety.
Somebody grab some tissue for Skilling.
Yes.
I know.
Skilling and I are going to have a party and just cry the whole time.
That's a great story. Yeah.
I love when Skilling cried at the eclipse, I wept with him.
Well, I thought
that was so sweet.
I thought it was great.
Yeah. Because he is on this earth to do weather. Like he loves weather more than anything in the world. And when he talks about it, you just feel that passion from him.
He loves weather like I love true crime.
Yeah, it's true.
Anyway, we're gonna be talking NASA, little satellites,
NASA.
And then I have some actors on from this amazing pro wrestling themed show play at a Red Theater. Mickey O'Sullivan, who's a good friend of mine, is in the show, and it's a sort of a satire on pro wrestling mixed with race.
That's per. Yeah.
There you go.
We're waiting on that. So that's good.
Right, it's the show we've been waiting on.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good show, guys.